It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. What a great show we have for you. Owen J.J. Stone, he's full of it today. We've got Michael Nunez from Gizmodo. He's here with his sunglasses and his hat. And, of course, Phil Libin, the former founder of Evernote, who's now a VC. And we've got two refugees on the program today. We're going to talk about Silicon Valley's reaction to the immigration executive order. We've got lots of news about data mining, artificial intelligence, and one of our hosts is a cyborg. Find out why and how next on Twit. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and once again, time for Twit's audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It's only going to take a couple of minutes, really. That's all. Just go to twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. Your anonymous feedback will help us make Twit even better. And thanks for your continued support.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 599, recorded Sunday, January 29th, 2017. Fold with dignity. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/twit2. And by Betterment, a smart, easy-to-use, and less expensive way to invest for your financial future. Get 1 month managed free when you make an initial deposit of $10,000 or more at betterment.com/twit. And by Eero. Why settle for just a Wi-Fi router when you could have a brilliant, hyper-fast, super-simple Wi-Fi system? No more buffering, no more dead zones. Finally, Wi-Fi that works. For free overnight shipping, visit Eero.com. And at checkout, select overnight shipping and enter the code TWIT. And by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you fresh, high-quality ingredients to cook delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/TWIT. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news. Oh, what a week it has been. Yeah, but we've got a great team here to discuss it. Joining us from his secret lair somewhere on the East Coast, Owen J.J. Stone. I don't know what to say. Wearing cat ears.
I'm actually scared to be here today. It's been a rough week, Leo.
It has.
Undisclosed location indeed.
Yeah.
You know,
you gotta
technology is still afoot. We need it.
Get down
so
in
I
the
can be here with you.
Get down in the bunker there, Owen.
My cave has Wi-Fi. That's all we need.
Yeah. Also joining us, Phil Libin. You remember Phil. He's been on the show, of course, many times, but he's also former CEO and one of the founders at Evernote. He's now managing director at General Catalyst, where he invests in technology. Phil, great to have you.
Nice to be back.
And I like it. Your timing is good because you are not only an immigrant, your family was a refugee family from the Soviet Union.
That's right.
So you have some standing to talk about the latest immigration and technology news. And also joining us for his second time in a year, so we got to get you on more often, Michael Nunez. He is at Gizmodo.com. Great to have you back, Michael.
Yeah, thanks for the invite. I'm glad to be back.
Yeah, I apologize for not getting you back sooner. What's your beat at Gizmodo?
So I'm the technology editor here. So I'm basically just overseeing.
Well, that narrows it down quite a bit.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a pretty broad scope, but we do our best to basically cover everything that we
nice.
See that's important. Yeah.
And you work with Christina Warren, of course, over there.
Yeah. She's a relatively new addition, but she has been amazing. Yeah. It's been great to have her, on our side.
If you're watching the video, we're going to call Michael Goose today on the show. I don't know why. So, I guess we have to talk about, and I have mixed feelings about talking about politics. We try to keep to politics only where it intersects with technology. But in fact, there's a pretty big intersection
This is, of course, the concluding of President Trump's first week in office. A lot of executive orders, and one yesterday that seemed to have really triggered a reaction from Silicon Valley. I shouldn't even say that, from all of the tech community, and that's his ban on immigrants, visitors from seven nations that are predominantly Muslim. But more than that, even green card holders, legal residents of the United States, were blocked at the border. There was some question of whether that was the intent. Apparently, the Border Control called the White House and said, now, do you want us to stop green card holders, too? And they said, you bet. And a number of people were detained. The tech community's reaction to this was of varying strengths. Mark Zuckerberg, one of the first to respond with a somewhat tepid response on Facebook, saying he didn't think it was a good idea, but not really calling it out. On the other hand, Sergey Brin, one of the founders of Google, immediately went to San Francisco International Airport to join the protests there. And there's Sergey. He, of course, is also an immigrant from the Soviet Union, Phil. I think so. Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. Why is Silicon Valley upset about this?
You know, to be honest with you, I'm not sure that the tech community is doing much good on this issue.
They may actually be causing more problems.
Yeah, or even kind of in the election in general. I think we are a little bit tone deaf about exactly who cares about what we think and who doesn't.
It's
becoming like Hollywood in this sense.
It's yeah, good point, but it's reasonable for Google, for instance, that has nearly 200 employees that are blocked by this order.
Of course.
People were, if they were overseas, would not be able to come back to Google.
Sure.
Many Google employees said, since our colleagues can't travel, we are not going to travel anymore. Mm-hmm. Google issued a statement saying, we're concerned about the impact of this order and any proposals that could impose restrictions on Googlers and their families, or that could create barriers to bringing great talent to the U.S. We continue to make our views on these issues known to leaders in Washington and elsewhere. It does sound like they're not condemning the order. They're more just saying, hey, this impacts our business, so we're not happy about
that. Yeah, and of course, every company has a responsibility to its employees and to make sure that that everyone's okay and that business doesn't get interrupted. And the much larger question is, I think we do have some moral responsibilities to refugees, to immigrants. But I do think the discussion on both sides here has been pretty poor and not helpful. There's very few reasonable voices here.
When the tech leaders, and Tim Cook, by the way, is in Washington right now, the CEO of Apple. He had dinner with Ivanka Trump and her husband, Jared Kushner, Trump's advisor, on Thursday, has been going around making the rounds. Cook issued a statement, said, I've heard from many of you who are deeply concerned about the executive order issued yesterday restricting immigration from seven Muslim-majority countries. I share your concerns. It is not a policy we support. That was probably the strongest kind of statement of from all the CEOs. But Tim Cook went and sat down along with Elon Musk. In fact, Musk's now met twice. He met again this week with President Trump. Do you agree, having been in a position like this, do you agree with them that it's important to meet with the incoming president?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't see...
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, I don't see what's to be gained by kind of shouting about everything.
Right.
I think it's just going to make the world worse. So there should be reasonable people on both sides. It's sometimes hard to do that. There's a lot of pressure to take a strong position. There's a lot of pressure to be very vocal. It's good that a lot of people are doing that, but I think we also need people who are actually trying to be reasonable and move the world forward.
Right. But when you're championing yourself as a beacon of hope and light, and basically, you know, constantly claiming that you're guiding the United States to this new frontier of greatness through technology, right, I think that you owe it to the people that you've promised, both American citizens but also your employees, to take a stand against some of this stuff. Because I mean, you know, I won't say that every single thing that Donald Trump is doing is wrong, but there are certainly some measures that can be just described accurately as xenophobic and problematic when it comes to sourcing talent from other countries and basically creating this, you know, this new and open world that all of these Silicon Valley companies are constantly talking about. So I was actually really disappointed by the number of leaders that were willing to speak out and the amount of time that it took them to actually say something. You know, there are people like Sheryl Sandberg who have spent years talking about progressive ideals, and then when push comes to shove, have actually been, you know, pretty quiet about these things.
She did finally issue a statement about not about the immigration thing, but about the women's I think Planned Parenthood, the women's march. She said
that's right. Yep.
Yeah. So, but you're right. She hasn't said a lot, and but like, I think as a C-level executive at a publicly held company, there is some responsibility to not get to not be political, not to be to become a Meryl Streep, but to in fact to be more judicious. Is that right?
So, look, I have personal opinions and all this stuff, and I'm actually totally happy talking about them.
Yeah, not but that's separate.
Totally happy talking about them.
Yeah.
What I also trying to be mindful of is what's actually going to be the most effective way for the world to move in the direction that I would like it to move.
Right.
And very often that's not telling people from a position of assumed authority what they should think and how they should think.
So how would you go about it?
Well, for example, it's not clear to me that Sheryl Sandberg, like, being louder and faster about her position actually helps convince the people that need to be convinced to change the position.
Right.
Like, it maybe makes people feel better. It maybe makes for better demonstrations. I'm not sure that it actually makes the world – it pushes the world further in the direction that Sheryl would want it to be pushed.
There's also a significant risk, I think, of silicon – at some point, people realizing that the problem isn't so much immigration.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is more created by Silicon Valley and automation, and that, in fact, the tech community could quickly become the enemy here, could they not?
We are pretty tone deaf as an industry, I think. I think we are like, we got used to being treated as heroes and kind of the people that are making the world for the past decade or so, and I think that's on the verge of changing. And I think we're kind of tone deaf about how we talk about it. I think like Hollywood tripped over that line a while ago.
Hollywood's given up. Hollywood doesn't care. Hollywood's Hollywood, and I think most people in California feel the same way.
And we're close to following that.
Right. And the tech industry could be going over that line.
I would like us not to. I'd like us to remain effective. And I think that a little bit too much shouting hurts that.
What I've learned over the past week is that Silicon Valley continues to exist in a bubble that is essentially unrelatable for a large majority of Americans, right? You know, there is a... there's been a diversity problem in Silicon Valley for years that is basically underreported and under discussed. And I think, I don't want to put all of the blame on Sheryl Sandberg, but I think, she in particular is an easy target because she wants to be, or she, positioned herself to be considered a leader for the feminist movement and wrote the book Lean In. Right. And so I think, when there is such divisive, rhetoric, that is just constantly coming, from Washington, I think that, you kind of have to choose one way or another. Either you're purely a capitalist and that's totally fine and you can refrain from saying anything, but then you can't go on to expect to be treated as an authoritative leader on any progressive movement. So I think,
I think, Phil, you're saying they shouldn't be a leader in the progressive movement. They should stick to their knitting. And do their job. Although I can understand why Sergey Brin, who went to that protest, but I think as a private citizen, I don't think he said I'm bearing the banner of Google, but as a private citizen, I feel strongly about this because I was a refugee.
I think you got three different issues here that are being conflated. One is the issue of like how publicly should people state their views? And the answer to that is as publicly as they want.
Yeah.
And everyone can make that decision and state them as publicly as they want.
Right.
The second issue is what is the proper role of someone speaking for a company.
That's a different matter entirely.
Entirely. And then there's a third issue, which is what's most effective.
Right.
And it's that most effective issue where we are about to go over a cliff as an industry, where we're about to take everything that we in general think is important and significantly hold those things back by being perceived as hectoring and lecturing and being tone deaf and being out of touch. We will make the situation worse if we keep doing
it. Can I say something? I've been real quiet because I'm trying not to do the yelling thing that you said because I'm prone to
do
that.
I feel like we are on the edge right now, on the precipice of a patented "Oh, Doctor" rant.
So, as a person who doesn't live in the bubble, I think that you're generally wrong when you say that the tech community is tone deaf and that Hollywood is tone deaf. The country in a majority voted an opposite direction of what we currently have as a regime, the popular number of people. Mm-hmm. So that the way the people are speaking and when they speak out, it's not tone deaf in general unless you live in the middle of the country and you've seen your job creation go away. As opposed to in Silicon Valley, where everything's becoming automated, we're not talking about what educations people need to be having and what we should do for education for people to have these new future jobs. Because until we get the robots to build themselves, build the wall, pay the taxes for it, we've got to do some other things and fix these issues. So yes, it's important for a CEO of a major company who has immigrants working for them, mostly as engineers or whatever they have, because you never really see them on a higher echelon of work and jobs.
Well, wait a minute. Sachin Nadella, Sundar Pichai.
I said in general, and don't talk to me like that, because he just made the statement of the fact the way that racially, the way Silicon Valley is, you know how it is in general. I said in general. I didn't say all. Okay. I didn't say every. I said generally.
Okay.
So again, let me finish. The way things are set up.
I'm just saying
that they're not tone deaf, and maybe if we did a little bit better educating the people in the middle of the country about what's about to happen to them, maybe we don't have to fall off a cliff or push ourselves off a cliff or rappel off a cliff.
I agree with you on that.
Work together about it.
There is a leadership role Silicon Valley could take, which is, look, the change is coming. We understand this change. You might want to get ready for this. This is the educational. I mean, you push STEM, but these are things you've got to do. As a country, we've got to do to prepare ourselves. And it's not building a wall, because that's not going to solve the problem. That's not where the problem's coming from. That's a mistake.
The best thing I saw for that was, instead of building a wall, why don't we build a solar panel wall out there in the desert and get some free energy? I'm sitting like it's the little things like that. I'm like a 12-year-old said it. And you're like, that'd be amazing.
It's difficult because Silicon Valley has a lot to get from this new president. They have repatriation of funds. They have investment. There's a lot. Elon Musk was meeting with President Trump this week, along with other auto manufacturers and industrialists, trying to bring industry back to this country. And Elon Musk is a shining example. They got tax breaks, although I think they paid back the loans.
I meant more tax breaks.
But more tax breaks. In fact, though, they all...
Well, and government contracts, too. Don't forget about SpaceX.
They're caught in the middle here, because they also have a lot of people working for them who are being put at disadvantage during this time. Musk tweeted yesterday, the blanket entry ban on citizens from certain primarily Muslim countries is not the best way to address the country's challenges. I think Elon's speaking to the...
I agree with that completely.
Yeah, many people negatively affected by this policy are strong supporters of the U.S. They've done right, not wrong, and don't deserve to be rejected. And then he's actually asking people to read the immigration order. And he's going to seek advisory council consensus and present it to the president. So this is an example of a tech leader saying, look, I've got a seat at the table. Yeah. I'm in the room where it happens. Let's do what is going to make a difference here.
Yeah, look, I understand that. People have to go and talk to the president. Whenever somebody jumps on Elon or, you know, black leaders or whatever, they're like, how could he meet with this guy? If you're not talking to the people, how do you know what's going on for real?
Yeah.
You're only hearing one side of it. You have to have people, leaders of an industry or a section, talk to this man. Because there is a lot of hyperbole in what goes on, what happens. I mean, we see with the executive orders what's coming down the pipe. But before that stuff happens, he's got to talk to people. If nobody shows up to talk to him, then who's he going to get his information from?
And so, we need to talk to people in a way that's likely to actually convince them, in a way that's likely to like.
Don't talk at them and don't patronize them and talk down to them.
Right. We need to convince the people we disagree with.
Yeah.
Not make the people that we agree with just louder and shoutier. That won't move the world forward.
The only concern with that. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, I think I think that's true. But there's also you run the risk of running of building a false equivalence here. You know, there is a moral obligation to speak out against humanitarian wrongdoings and basically the targeting of minority groups. And I think whether it's as a private citizen or as a corporation, these tech leaders need to be doing this to a greater extent. You know, it's not unheard of to have a Fortune 500 company take a stand politically against or for an issue. You know, there have Chick-fil-A, for instance, there are plenty of other instances where companies have, you know, in that case, that was the wrong side of history. But I think there are plenty of instances where companies have taken a stand and and have decided that they do have a moral obligation to, one, defend their employees, but two, to defend those that don't have a voice. And so, you know, today I'm wearing a, for those that aren't watching the video feed, I'm wearing a Make America Rage Again hat, just in solidarity with the people that don't have a voice. There are, you know, thousands of minorities that have been affected by the policies issued over the past week. And this is just one simple thing that I can do to show solidarity as an individual, sure. Right? I'm not speaking on behalf of Gizmodo. I am just an employee of Gizmodo speaking as an individual. And I think that it is a moral obligation to do that. I don't understand how people can justify remaining silent when you know, thousands of people's lives are being put at risk.
Another example is Lyft donating $1 million to the ACLU.
Lyft gave $1 million to the ACLU.
That's because, you know, I think that, you know, for me, it's a, I mean, I'm the son of an illegal immigrant. And so that's, you know, the political is personal right now. And for some tech leaders, you know, they've made that clear. I think Sergey Brin showing up in person to a protest at the San Francisco airport is, you know, is something that he certainly doesn't have to do as a billionaire. Right. I mean, he could probably hire 100 people to go do that for him. But he showed up because he apparently felt a moral obligation to do that. And I would, you know, I've just been disappointed by how few have shown that, that level of what, of bravery, basically. You know, I think let me ask
Phil something, because, I think your position, which is you want to make sure that you are heard and that you do what's effective, kind of presupposes that we're in the same kind of position this country has been in since World War II, where there are opposing points of view and reasonable people can discuss them and reach consensus and negotiate. I think there is a sense in this country that we are no longer in that situation, that we're in a unprecedented situation where I think people fear that we have a new administration that isn't interested in consensus building, that is, in fact, not, doesn't matter what you say, you're not going to be effective with them. You don't think we've reached that point yet?
So I hope not. And maybe this is just me being an optimist, but I don't think we have, and I hope that we haven't. And I think regardless of what any individual in the administration or not kind of wants to do or doesn't want to do, the process of governing is still about getting consensus and making laws and enforcing them.
At least it has been.
You say that until so we get executive orders, and then we got to go fight through court to get people freed. And the president, the leader of the free world, is not talking like a rational person at 60% of the clip. Like, he's just rambling off and complaining about things and talking off topic. Like, it'd be totally different if I just didn't like the guy and he was a B student.
Well,
and
I think a lot of Republicans,
I would feel a lot different.
A lot of Republicans think that this dissent is coming from this kind of unreasonable position. That's coming, and so I think they dismiss it. They don't like it.
It's ineffective.
And so as a result, it's ineffective. On the other hand, I think a lot of people on the left feel like we've reached this really unfortunate log jam where neither side is hearing the other side anymore.
There's a philosophy here in general, right? And I think, like, for just about any position, there is a naive argument in favor of it and a naive argument opposed to it.
Right.
And they're both wrong. And then there's a deeper argument in favor of it and a deeper argument opposed to it. And in some sense, they're both right. At least they both have, like, elements of
truth.
Each has merit. And what we do when we hold a position, we tell ourselves the deep version of that argument, and we surround ourselves in our media bubbles with people who only talk about agreement.
But Phil, don't you think that Owen, as an African American, Michael, as the son of an illegal immigrant, are going to have a somewhat different point of view about all this because they're potentially victims of this. They have been victims of this,
of course.
And so they're it's very personal.
I totally understand that, and I think that almost everyone, and certainly everyone in this panel, holds the actual deep, meaningful version of their position. But when we argue with the other side, we tend to throw the shallow version of their argument back at them. We don't make an attempt to actually understand what's actually motivating people to believe in the other way.
Right.
And real progress, I think, is made when you get the deep version of the argument in favor and the deep version of the argument against, and you knock them against each other and you kind of move the world forward that way. So I very much want us to be to accept more refugees. I am a refugee myself, not even my family, like me directly. I think we need to be much more compassionate. I would like personally to see much more immigration, both skilled and unskilled. Like, I have personal opinions, which I'm happy to discuss with anyone, that is actually pretty much, you know, in line with more refugees, more immigration, more of everything. I just want to talk about it in a way that's actually may make that possible.
But when you go after legal immigrants, green card immigrants, mm-hmm. then I can see how it would appear to people as a racist move as opposed to a rational.
So let's make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And it's not.
All right, but what about the attacks on science and fact-based? You know, I think that there's something greater going on that we're not discussing here. You know, there are. It's okay to have different political views, but there's also a disinformation war that we're participating in as members of the media.
Yep.
And I think that we have to be vigilant. I think that it's unfair to say that Trump deserves to say his piece or speak his mind if he's referring to alternative facts and if he's blatantly lying every time that he or his administration makes a public comment. So, you know, I think that the thing that concerns me about Phil's point of view is that if you treat it as if you treat some of these ideas as equal, then you are essentially accepting alternative facts. You're accepting unscientific.
Michael, I'm not treating these ideas as equal. I have ideas that I think are right, that I prefer significantly over
others. I think you're
being
pragmatic.
I'm being pragmatic. I'm saying this is how the world changes. This is how we move forward.
It's not so
much. The world usually moves forward America moves forward when one set of ignorant people gets pushed by a set of enlightened people to change. Now, again, as I said, the popular vote did what they did, and the middle of the country is hurting. And yes, they have valid problems, they have valid issues, and I understand those issues when you talk about it. But when it goes against science, when it goes to pushing on your religious beliefs, when it goes to taking away other people's freedoms, it's wrong. And that's why women march. That's why black people march. That's why thank goodness for Facebook Live, because people are lazy now and they can sit in their house and half march with you and we can see it. But these people push things along. There's not two cool people sitting in the middle of a room talking about, you know what, Martin Luther King, you're right. Yeah. I'm glad we had this 3-day conversation. They had to get beat, water hose, killed, dragged down the streets bloody, and keep pushing until people finally say, you know what?
But maybe we can do it better. Maybe we can do it better. Maybe we don't have to do that.
Tea Party, women's vote, black people, Black Lives Matter again. You tell me when we get to Star Trek, because I'm trying to get to it, brother. I want to live in the world of peace, and we only got to worry about the border.
Here's an example.
I got to deal with what we got to deal with.
Here's an example from Microsoft where the company made a statement that was more judicious than the personal statement of its CEO, Satya Nadella. Mm-hmm. Microsoft's corporate statement, we share their concerns about the impact of the executive order on our employees from the listed countries, all of whom have been in the United States lawfully. We're actively working with them to provide legal assistance. And my screen just went dark. And advice. Then Nadella, though, issued a personal statement on LinkedIn. Probably, you know, we know he's the CEO of Microsoft, but it was a much more personal statement. As an immigrant and as a CEO, I've both experienced and seen the positive impact immigration has on our company, for the country, and for the world. We will continue to advocate on this important topic. That sounds to me, Phil, like a very judicious splitting that you would approve of.
And look, I don't think we really know what's going to work and what's not going to work.
Yeah, we got to try it all.
Yeah, I think we got to be open-minded about trying different stuff. And I am glad that people are marching and protesting. Of course they should be. That's a great way to move things forward. It's totally necessary.
But as someone that is successful and given platforms such as this one, you know, don't you think that it's an obligation to voice those opinions or to show some level of solidarity with, you know, with the attacks that are being made on the EPA all of this spread of misinformation? You know, the only reason propaganda was able to spread so easily prior to the election is because of the platforms that we typically advocate on this program.
And I would say this as Twit: we want to be fact based, we want to be science based.
Yeah.
Any good technologist.
As a technologist, one of the basic fundamental beliefs of technology is that, well, technology is science applied. That science, right. The scientific method works, that there are provable scientific facts, and technology itself is part of that proof because it's the application of science. And so if you're going to be, this is one of the reasons that I've always tried to reject here conspiracy theories and soft facts and fake news. It seems to me that there are such things as facts. And if anything, that's what, as technologists, we have to celebrate.
Absolutely.
And
it's a question of effectiveness, too.
Facts exist.
I think I do have an obligation to try to make the world better, very much.
Yeah.
Moral obligation.
And yet, at the same time, technology is, I think you could argue, I would say the single most important factor to this disruption that is about to happen around the world is artificial intelligence, machine learning, automation, the disruption, the technology. You know, we celebrated disruption for a long time. TechCrunch has a conference called Disrupt. Turns out disruption is very disruptive
and
to
I've been
people.
On this for years. Like, I think the first time you had me on a podcast, I was like, I hate the word disruption.
Why?
10 years ago.
But it is happening.
Because it's a fetish.
But we shouldn't fetishize
people
it.
People who fetishize disruption
it.
Are yeah. fetishizing something destructive.
It I is said destructive.
It's about creation. It's not about disruption. Yeah. Disruption is a side effect, which we should actually try to minimize if we can.
I love it.
For the record, I'm anti-AI. We got to stop ourselves from killing ourselves before we let robots do it.
Owen, this is important.
Owen, when the AI finally comes, they will have access to the Wayback Machine. So it's really important to state for the record that I've always been on their side.
We have
you. See what I'm saying? Hey, look.
I love the AI.
Yeah, the AI is great.
I, for one, welcome our AI overlords.
Yeah, always have, always will, regardless of how far back we go in their Google searches.
We are checking the index, and you, Philip,
my daughter loves the AI.
Us.
I wish the AI never existed.
One of us. I also would submit that the I love what you said, Phil, and I do remember you saying that the first time. It was years ago.
Like a decade ago, yeah.
Let's celebrate creation, not disruption. Nevertheless, disruption happens.
Yep.
And it's very hard to stop technology. I mean, even AI, nuclear weapons, whatever it is, look, it's obvious. You look at nuclear weapons, that's going to be a problem, but good luck stopping them, right?
Well, we've done a decent job of stopping them so far.
We've slowed them down.
Can we get an ad or a tech story just
yeah.
to clear
here's a, the pal- Here's okay. one final story, and then we're going to move on. And this is the one that just strikes me with a lot of irony. Peter Thiel, of course, who was a Trump supporter, gave a lot of money, I think $1.5 million to the Trump campaign, is in fact part of the transition team, is in fact an advisor, apparently has bought a New Zealand citizenship and several thousand acres of lakefront property in New Zealand. But he has a bolt hole.
A while ago, right? Not recently.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, a while ago. He's been buying it up for a while.
I don't think this is a Trump thing. I think this is like a zombie apocalypse prepping thing.
Okay. There's a great article this week in the New Yorker about how the tech community is planning for doomsday.
Yeah.
And some of it's political. Some of it's just acknowledging, as anybody who's up on tech,
you've seen the doomsday bunkers that they have for sale, right?
Yeah, this is so that's one of the things in the article is this. They took an old Atlas missile silo north of Wichita, Kansas. It was decommissioned in 1965. A developer bought it, made a 15-story underground condo complex, $3 million starting price. You don't have any windows, but they've put up screens with videos of whatever you choose. In one case, a woman who's from New York got high-res videos of her scene outside her window looped for a few days, and she's going to watch that when the zombie apocalypse hits.
Yep.
They also talked about Steve Huffman, the founder of Reddit, who had LASIK surgery because he said, well, you know, when everything goes to hell, I won't be able to get eyeglasses, and I want to be able to hunt deer with perfect vision or whatever it is.
I've got a more ambitious plan. I want to be on the moon when it happens.
Good luck with that.
You know, if you're a seven...
Who on this panel has a bug out bag and an escape plan?
No.
Leo, you're in trouble.
No, I told Phil this before the show.
Nunez, you're in trouble. You got to get on it.
I choose to go down with the ship.
What if it's just a minor thing?
Agreed.
If it gets that bad, I'm going to fight to preserve the great country that we are, the republic that we are, with freedom and justice for all. And if that fails, I'm going down with the ship, because I don't want to be in a bunker 17 miles underground.
You don't think it'll be more effective fighting for the country you love with, like, with some bottled water in a bag?
Listen to me. Leo, first of all, just stop it.
Oh, I'm prepared for an earthquake. I'm prepared for an earthquake.
Not an earthquake. I'm talking about, you know, I mean, we got a 9mm with two clips in the mag. We got stuff we got to get to get out safe.
You know what, Lisa, my wife wouldn't let me get a gun. I told you.
You wouldn't get to keep it. You're taking a case of emergency.
I wanted a shotgun. She wouldn't let me get one. I said, honey, I'll get training. We'll have a lock on it.
Because that's why you don't let five-year-olds play in your bug-out bag. Now, listen to me. You're out here doing ham radio. We need you, Leo.
I do know
ham. When the
ham.
Power goes down, we need you.
I have the ham.
You're one of the oldest dinosaurs left on the earth. You are to be preserved, sir. I will send you a bag.
You know, I've read far too many dystopian end-of-the-world science fiction novels. There's so many great ones.
There's never too many, though.
They keep coming up with them. Of course, Jerry Purnell's Lucifer's Hammer, which is an amazing story of an asteroid ending civilization. There was a great one where a guy goes up to the mountains and then gets hurt, and he misses the plague that kills most of the – I can't remember the name of it. He comes back down. It's an older one. But in every case, the resulting civilization, I don't want to live in. If I have to have LASIK so I can kill a deer, I don't want to be there. I'm going to stick around. I'll stay here. I'll go down with the ship. Anyway, it's ironic that the people who have the most money, who have benefited the most from this country, from the way it works in this country, are the ones who have the not just bug out bags, but have the lakefront property in New Zealand.
You want to know what the fun thought about that is? For a person who's just broke and has a friend with a bunker, I actually know how to hunt. If you don't know how to hunt, if you don't know how to karate chop somebody in the neck, and you don't know how to grow food, you're beat anyway. So good luck, billionaire. Not getting all that other education. They need to, that's a good thing. We start up. We teach rich people how to survive. We beat them with sticks and teach them money.
Don't you know that's rich. Why? Now you know why Mark Zuckerberg said, "I'm going to only eat what I kill for a while." Yeah. I'm sure he's preparing for this. Right.
You got to. You got to. If you can't do those things, if you can't grow food, if you can't fish,
Well, you just need to buy a lot of Soylent,
I
think.
Fish.
I think that's the easiest answer.
And can you fish without a fishing rod?
I have many cases of Soylent, actually. That's a good point.
Oh, yeah?
I have about 20 cases of Soylent.
Well, that's unfortunate. That's unfortunate because, I've tasted that stuff. It's not too good.
It's addictive. You got to just try it for a week, and then you can't stop drinking it.
Would you
like some right now, Phil?
I will not. Thank you.
Soylent all round. It's not made of people, by the way.
No.
It's quite good. Oh, come on. Get Phil one of those coffee Soylents. It's in my...
Can't we give Phil like a scotch or something useful?
The coffee Soylent tastes like somebody spilled a cup of coffee into mud and then scooped it all back up.
Yeah, but it's really good mud.
Yeah.
It is pretty good mud.
That's a good description. It's a little chalky.
The good news is it doesn't cause diarrhea anymore.
That is good news.
Yeah.
Yeah, you feel like that'd be just a baseline requirement for a meal replacement.
They had a little diarrhea thing. To their credit, they never had a diarrhea problem with the liquid Soylent. It was only with the Soylent bars and the Soylent powder that caused intestinal disruption.
To their credit, indeed.
That doesn't make me any more confident in their product, to be quite honest.
Nope. I'd rather eat bugs or kill a squirrel.
I'll take cricket granola bars.
No, this is so much better than cricket. What are you crazy?
I mean,
had squirrel? Have you had frog?
I don't. I've had frog. I haven't had squirrel.
Squirrel, really?
Doesn't sound good.
Let's go down. Let's go down to Virginia.
Is there any meat on a squirrel? It seems like that would be.
Hey, it's survivable meat. I mean, I'm waiting for the apocalypse so I can drop a couple pounds. That's all. I'm going to live off of this for a minute.
You know what? Wow. I am. Owen and I are stockpiling. We just keep it around the middle. That's all.
Oh, you want to know my secret weapon in my go bag?
Oh, that hurts me.
What's
Leo.
Your secret?
My secret weapon is cigarettes.
Not to smoke, to trade.
No, for trade. You know what people do for some cigarettes?
Because
that sealed, I swap them out every 6 months.
That's like in prison. That's like prison. In prison, cigarettes. Although, you know, the Bernie Madoff, who's in jail right now for the great big Ponzi scheme, cost millions of people their life savings. He apparently has cornered the Swiss Miss market.
Mm.
So this guy never stops. He went to the prison commissary, bought all the hot chocolate mix, the Swiss Miss, and now sells it back to the other inmates. and at a great profit. Because, you know, when you really want a nice warm cup of cocoa in prison, Bernie's the guy.
It's like a Ponzi scheme with marshmallows.
Man. I'm a business, man.
I'm business. It's business.
That's right.
TCB. Sure you don't want some?
I've actually stopped eating.
That's an interesting strategy. How's that working for you? Yeah,
pretty great. Pretty great. Remember how a couple of years ago it was
You do look great. You look like you lost weight.
I've lost 50 pounds since.
You look fantastic.
Thank you.
And you did that by just not eating.
Yeah, it turns out if you stop eating, pretty much all problems go away.
Except your hair falls out and your teeth.
No, not for a long time. You can go quite
All problems go away. You got one major problem. You're hungry. I see.
That's a problem, isn't it, Owen?
This is going to be the next legal requirement for all like Silicon Valley CEOs and VCs is going to be fasting.
They go through all these weird things, right? Microdosing LSD, freezing themselves in chambers at 200 degrees below zero. So the new one is
fasting.
Go ahead.
I think we should sell them oxygen bars. You know what I mean? Like, you know, air bars where you just, it's scented with strawberry scents or something and you take it out of a bag, it's nothingness. Somebody would buy that.
It's a good idea.
And this soil.
Probably.
You guys are missing out.
Yep.
It is like chalk, but with a nice coffee aroma.
Yeah. It upset my stomach immediately.
You know what it tastes like? It tastes like the stuff they make you drink, the barium they make you drink before they do an x-ray of your lower intestine. I've got a fondness for that.
It's good. It's good. Mm-hmm.
So wait a minute. Fasting. Are you a 5-2-er? Are you a daily faster? What is your methodology?
I tried a bunch of different stuff. I'm now, I decided random.
So your body doesn't get used to
Random fasting?
Random fasting.
And for how long?
So I roll a die every morning, a D20.
Oh, my God.
I call
God.
It Dungeons & Dragons Diet. I roll a die, and it tells me whether or not I'm eating and how much.
You've got to write a book. The Dungeons & Dragons Diet would be a bestseller.
Until they sued me. But yeah. Yeah. It would be.
So, well, maybe like knock a couple corners off the die.
There's 20. It's a 20-sided die. D20. So what happens when they're the...
Well, I'm still playing with the tables, you know, but basically there's a few different outcomes. About half the time it's just nothing. You just don't eat at all.
All day. So the next roll?
Yeah, all day. Yeah,
to the next roll.
Yeah, but I've tried it out. It's really fun. Yeah.
Do you want to do it, Leo? How about this? How about you guys go and do the inner city diet where we can't afford food and we're just struggling and wish to God we had food? How about you go buy this food that you're not eating and send it down to the hood somewhere?
Who was it? There was a journalist that said,
because this is silly.
I'm gonna live on food stamps. He made it one day.
Yeah. Well, it's actually a pretty good idea if this ever does become a thing to like still spend the same amount that you would have spent anyway and just donate the access.
Oh, it wasn't a journalist. It was Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah.
And she gave up.
That does not surprise me.
138 a meal. You know what you can get for 130 a meal? You can get a pack of Kool-Aid, a ramen noodle, and like a slice of bread at the bodega when they put it out, they sell it in slices.
Owen, if that's what the die says, that's what I'm going to do.
Or you can get a bag of Cheetos, the 99 cent bag.
Okay. Phil, will you send me your spreadsheet?
I'd like to.
I'm going to do the Phil Libin Dungeons and Dragons diet.
This solves my two biggest problems in my life. I was super obese and I wasn't rolling enough dice. Got both done.
No, in fact, Kevin Rose did a fasting app.
Zero, yeah.
Zero.
No, it's the new, like, stupid thing in Silicon Valley. I'm not proud of it.
There's a lot of research, though. This is not that stupid.
I could do it. If I can lose weight, if I just did this and lost, like, 90 pounds, I could sell the inner city urban diet to white people for, like, $1 billion. They'd be like, wow, like, yeah.
Oh, and we can collaborate on this.
I like the urban diet.
Phil, to be honest with you, I need to get your number so I can talk to you next week.
Yeah.
It's rare that I talk to a person or hear a person that's so calm like you. I need that in my life. I meditate. But, Phil, you may be quiet. I'm usually not quiet. I was quiet that whole first time.
He's not calm. He's exhausted. He hasn't eaten in days, you know.
Well, I am
that's
full
what
of
it
energy.
Is. But, you know, you're being real rational, and I tried to be rational. You kept me from yelling. I appreciate you, Phil.
Can I do microdosing and fasting?
You could. Oh, and we need to collaborate on this. This is a serious idea you have.
I do. You know what I do once a month, just so it helps me with my fatness. I do. What's that thing called where you juice four days out of the month, by the fourth day I want to kill myself. So
I think this is better.
Isn't that why Barry Bonds isn't going to the Hall of Fame because he juiced?
Well, I'm not juicing like that. I'm juicing like cucumbers and carrots and apples and such.
Oh, that's a different kind of juice.
Yeah. And the worst part is, too, after the third day, I feel so much better. I have more energy and I'm more awake. But again, I realize I haven't eaten real food.
That's because your body thinks it's dying. It thinks it's
My body's going, this is all over.
This is totally solvable. You're actually right. The research in this is super interesting.
It's very good research.
But it is very much like the fad du jour in Silicon Valley.
No, it's so funny how these Silicon Valley types.
I'm just going to tell you
Well,
this
they said the same about...
It was ketosis for a while, right? It was a ketogenic diet.
It's all tied to it.
Yeah.
So, I'll send you... I just want to say this, we can talk about something normal. When I was a kid, there were 4 years of my life where we were desperately poor. I used to be called an Ethiopian. That's part of the reason I'm overweight, because I had such a thing about... I didn't know where my next meal was coming from. I had to steal food to eat.
So you were like
they called me Ethiopian. I was like skinny. And once we got money, we had whatever, then I was eating, and I had an eating disorder because I went so long without food. So I know what it's like to go to bed and not eat for 3 days, and the only meal I'm getting is during school. And in the summertime, I'm like wondering, how am I going to eat? So when I hear somebody's like talking about fasting, and I'm thinking like, somebody with a job and all this money and they're not eating food, I'm like, are you insane?
Yeah.
Like, it freaks me out to my core to know that there's kids somewhere right now that would hear that and would choke you in your sleep to have a sandwich.
Well, that's simple. Pack up the food you'd eat and send it to a poor child.
I think this is totally like a good idea. Like if it ever becomes a thing, take the money you're not spending that day
and donate it to care.
Part of the Dungeons and Dragons diet should clearly be.
I'll get on Kevin about it. Anyway. I'm going to call Kevin tonight. Get on about it.
I love it. We're going to take a break and then we're going to get back to tech. You know what? This has been a great conversation. You guys are great, and I think I appreciate the different points of view. Owen J.J. Stone is here from IQMZ.com, which, by the way, you should go to because he does these great interviews. I had a lot of fun.
I'm going to get Phil on because I need somebody with some contrast and calm. That's why I got to get Phil.
Yeah.
Phil got some. I don't even know what Phil's talking about. But I feel like it's like in the middle of the ocean. So I'm trying to get to the middle so I could expand the world, I guess.
I agree. We all need to get there. Phil Libman from formerly of Evernote. Now he is managing director at General Catalyst, which is a VC fund.
It is indeed.
All right. Anybody we would know that you're investing in?
Snapchat.
Oh, I've heard of them.
Airbnb.
When's the Snapchat IPO? Any minute now.
It just happened, right? Was that?
Did it happen?
No. Joke.
Big story.
I don't know.
Breaking news.
I don't know.
They say like March or April soon.
Yeah.
GeneralCatalyst.com. And that's Michael Nunez. We know him from Gizmodo.com. Michael F. Nunez on the Twitter. He wants to make
America, happy to be here. Thanks
America
for having me.
Rage again. Our show today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. This is a great solution for the geek in us all for home loans. If you're going to buy a house, you need to get a loan. Most of us don't have the scratch to just buy it outright. Or maybe you're going to refi, get some cash out of that house. The problem is this loan process, man, it feels like it's from the 19th century. You know, you go into an office, you bring boxes of paperwork. You practically got a guy in a green visor and sleeve garters with a quill pen saying, let me look up the rate for you. This is actually what happened to us the last time when we bought our house 3 years ago. We went in there. The guy has a sheaf of, it's like printed on onion skin, hundreds of pages. And he's licking his finger going, well, let me see. I think I can find a good rate for crazy. Not anymore. Go to quickenloans.com/twit2. We got a new URL for you. quickenloans.com/twit2. Quicken Loans, you know, one of the premier lenders in the United States. I think I just saw that they were the number two lender. They are a great company. And if you look at the website, you'll see all those J.D. Power customer satisfaction awards. They are not only one of the biggest lenders, they're one of the best lenders in the country. And they've created a product just for the geeks among us, people who would like to do this all online. So online has a lot of advantages. First of all, you can do it from your couch on your phone and your tablet on your computer. You don't have to leave the house. You don't have to go to an office. You don't have to go through papers. You can submit your pay stubs, your bank statements with a touch of a finger, all online. And then because it's online, you can customize it. They've got sliders that allow you to choose the rate, the length of your loan in real time, so you can get it just the way you like it. Approval in minutes, because computers, right? For a loan that's tailored to you. And it's all online. Check it out today at Rocket Mortgage at Quicken Loans, quickkenloans.com/twit2. Equal housing lender, of course, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. quickkenloans.com/twit2 for Rocket Mortgage. So hard not to be political here because there's a lot of stuff in this arena. Things
pick,
like
pick a direct story and then we'll go talk about that direct
Twitter
topic.
Discloses in its transparency reports a couple of national security letters.
That's not political.
Well, it comes from the Obama era, so at least it's like nonpartisan. We've gone back to the other side. Now, these national security letters come with a gag order. Yes. These are part of the Patriot Act. But the FBI has told Twitter they can now talk about it.
Yep.
So that's one of the things that's changed. These gag orders used to be open-ended. You can never say anything to the people we're asking for information from. You can never say anything publicly. So
asinine.
Yeah. And I think courts, not the FISA courts, but real courts with judges who have names have said, you know, you really, there's got to be a end date on this stuff. So Twitter says we were encouraged by the lifting of these two gag orders and those recently disclosed by Cloudflare, by Google, by the Internet Archive and Yahoo. We are still unsatisfied with the restriction on our right to speak more freely about these requests. And they want to push for the legal ability to speak more openly on this topic. They have a lawsuit against the U.S. government. It's actually against Loretta Lynch, the former attorney general under Obama. But the suit continues. Next hearing, they say, is February 14th. So all they really were able to say is there were two letters. Yeah. They were accompanied by gag orders when they were served. And we couldn't notify the account holder, but apparently now they have. Those continue. And I don't think, you know, I think this is on Congress to stop doing this, to stop, you know, these NSLs, I think.
I read that. I went and looked through all 32 of my Twitter accounts to make sure I wasn't on that list of the two.
How many do you have, really?
32.
What is that? One for each digit? What do you,
I am very.
What system are you on?
I am. I got to get Nunez. One of my T-shirts says Incognito because I'm out here on the internet.
I will definitely take that T-shirt. I would love to.
I have 23 Instagram accounts. It's a very lucrative business to build up a legit account and then sell it off.
You build it up, get some followers, you post the naked pictures or whatever it is that you do, and then
delete all the posts, sell it to somebody else. They change the name. They get rocking. They got real people.
Really? That's a business.
Wow.
Yeah. I was doing it with Twitter a long time ago. I would just build up fake accounts, things that people find amusing or funny or informative.
Interesting.
You know, have scheduled some tweets, have it busting out. People share it.
That's one of the things that's most interesting about the new economy is there are all these little niches that a clever, industrious person, you know, can find a way to make a living. If you understand how it works.
And if you get good numbers, you can get good money for selling accounts off, especially if you have a really good domain name, good name.
Isn't that a violation of the terms of service, though?
Oh, the heck
with
that.
I'm sure it is somebody. That's what I'm saying. Somebody got to catch me first. I didn't say no names. I got mine. Hey,
it's obvious Twitter couldn't care less. In fact, Twitter wants you to make as many accounts as you can. That way their growth numbers look better, right? Twitter really doesn't care.
I don't think they're shutting down Jesus or God on Twitter. So they're out there talking that talk, acting crazy. But
that's one of the interesting things that's happened this week because of the gag orders from the White House on many federal agencies, including the EPA, the Park Service, the Agriculture Service. That there have been, these alt accounts have been created. There's even one called Rogue POTUS that is claims to be from inside the White House. Of course, with Twitter, you have no idea of the legitimacy of these.
That's the thing about the alt accounts. You don't even know. You go to follow them, you don't even know if all of them are actually someone who is from the EPA. Being, you know what I mean?
Right.
But usually, you can tell by the information they start spitting out.
The National Park Service, I think it was the Badlands National Park, was tweeting scientific facts about climate change. Just science, just facts. And they got gagged. They got an order from the White House to knock it off. So they created an alt account in their spare time. They said, "Well, you can't stop what we do in our spare time." They did delete those official tweets, however.
So what are the alt accounts tweeting?
Pretty much kind of the same thing, although more and more they're tweeting support for a resistance movement, support for protests. Mm. Whether it's true or not, and I suspect it's not true, the Rogue POTUS account is fascinating reading because whoever's writing it has enough insight into the realities. Rogue POTUS staff, at Rogue POTUS staff. And if it's not true, it's great fiction. it's very interesting, and it does sound like it's coming from somebody who's not going for the joke, not going for the traditional fake.
No,
account.
They don't seem to be making fun of. You know what I mean? They're not.
Right.
They're giving information, and then sometimes in the information, it's like, oh my gosh, what are we doing here? But it's not really.
There are thousands of staffers in the White House. One has to assume that not all of them. Are happy.
It could even be a significant other. Somebody's coming home and telling them, like, guess what happened today at work? It's crazy.
Right.
Don't tell nobody, you know, but they're married. And so it could be a multitude of different things.
The only reason I bring this up is you know, I've lambasted Twitter for its, inability to control hate speech for, it's just kind of become a cesspool in some respects. But at the same time, it is also a place where dissidents can speak freely. Where a president can speak his mind kind of outside of the official channels. Trump continues to tweet on the Real Donald Trump account. And now you can tell.
He tweeted about World War III today, too. I'd like to just, you know, add that.
Well, you can tell that, if you use TweetDeck, it's one of the last clients. It comes from Twitter that tells you what phone is being used. And it still breaks down to. There are some tweets on Real Donald Trump that are from the iPhone that are bland kind of administrative detail accounts.
And presumed to be from his aides, correct?
Got to be from his aides. He got back, apparently, his old Galaxy S3.
That just seems like a bad idea.
And the ones that come from the Android
one of many.
Ones are the ones that come up in the middle of the night and are World War III.
I feel like it's a kid sneaking candy in his room at night. Like he like just wakes up in the night eating a Snickers bar like, Mom doesn't know me in this candy. And he's just tweeting in the middle of the night, sneaking off tweets.
Let me say that it violates our sense of what the president of the dignity of the office, but there's no rule.
But just from a security point of view, it's probably a pretty bad idea for him to be using an old Android phone to tweet.
Well, an S3 for sure. Now, it's not clear. The New York Times initially said, of course, the New York Times, as Donald Trump tells us, is a failing newspaper that is about to be out of business. But New York Times response was, actually, you know what? Our circulation and our subscriptions are higher than they've ever been. But anyway, doesn't matter. What the Times said is that he had to hand over his Android phone and receive a new, as Obama did when he took office, a new secured phone.
Makes sense.
But then apparently he got his S3 back. And he still uses that at least to tweet. And I do agree that there are some real security concerns because that phone has a microphone.
Hopefully at least taped over the camera and the mic, so...
Well, I'm hoping that, like, the Secret Service said, okay, you can have it back, but we're tearing out all the capability but Twitter here.
Yeah. That reminds me, once I was in China a couple of years ago, some big government conference, and they handed all of us a phone when we walked in that was all, like, pre-configured and set up for us. And they're like, here, please use this phone for, like, free internet.
Oh, God.
Yeah, we don't mind.
Like, yes, I'm going to use this
phone. Oh, yes, sir. It's not what you can tweet. It's what they can do with the phone.
And always.
So anyway, I am actually kind of more grateful that Twitter exists these days.
No question. Like for all the.
Why do you say that? Why? I mean, because, you know, it also amplifies a lot of misinformation and a lot of, of these alternative facts. So how can you say that Twitter is helping? I imagine
you're taking that stance. So here's the thing. Misinformation can come from back in the day, they're saying don't listen to the radio because they're telling lies on the radio.
Everywhere.
Don't turn on the TV. They're telling lies on the TV.
We interviewed
Gizmodo. They're making up like
Timothy Wu on Triangulation 2 months ago.
You're getting
ago.
Information from.
He's got a great new book called The Attention Merchants. It's a history of advertising. He talks about the first newspaper in the New York Sun, I think, in New York City in 1832 in a circulation war. They started a series on, they said, scientists in Europe have been able to build a telescope powerful enough to see the surface of the moon, and they described the population living on the moon, the people, and it was a great seller, never has been retracted. 180 years later, it's still, so fake news goes back at least to the first newspaper and probably back to the caveman, right?
Right, but in this case, it's propaganda, right? I mean, it wasn't that, you know, the big story.
You can't shut down every propaganda outlet. So I think it's best to have a channel that this stuff can come through so we can
see Nixon, the Nixon era, everything was propaganda. Remember where you got your media from? Again, propaganda comes through all channels, all forms. There's good content, and there's bad content. There's good people, there's bad people. So you can't just shut something down. You just have to accept it.
Yeah, but instead of doing a good job of sorting through that information or helping you sort through that information, I guess would be my point.
And that, so there's pressure on Facebook to do that, and Facebook has agreed to do some of that. But that's the difference between Facebook
and... I'm working on a thing for that.
Are you?
I am.
Well, tell us about it.
Nope. But I am working on it.
Is it like, say, a plugin that people could use?
You know, we're figuring it out, but a couple of friends of mine and I are tinkering around with some stuff that might help a little bit.
I do think it would be great for people to have some sort of widget that would give them additional information about the stuff they're reading. However, I think that the risk with talking about fake news is, first of all, it immediately was turned against people.
It's condescending.
And now Trump is talking about fake news.
Yeah.
B, it is condescending. People choose fake news because they choose to believe, or even not that they believe it, but it aligns with their beliefs in some unique way. And that's not, you can't tell somebody not to do that. It is important, though, that people in general who are just wandering down the street assaulted with misinformation should have a tool. Snopes is a start, but even better tools to judge whether it's real information.
Well, look, you started this off with like Twitter, right? Like saying you're glad that Twitter's around. And I'm like super happy that Twitter.
I think
there.
It's a window into what's going on. Yeah,
for
right?
all of the negatives of Twitter, and there's tons of negatives. Like I think the world is certainly better off that Twitter exists in it than if it didn't exist.
Right.
I think the positive.
Why? I mean, can't Facebook do a lot of the same stuff?
Well, it's not exactly the same with Facebook.
I mean, so for the point of playing devil's advocate here, but also I think there are more flaws than.
I always
say again.
Whenever someone says devil's advocate, they're usually not about to say something like super meaningful after that because it's kind of a cheap trick. Like you can disagree with anything as devil's advocate. Like,
I will defend the right to use devil's advocate. I do it all the time, only because sometimes we need to get other opinions out so we can. I'll give you a straw man to argue against if nothing else.
I just need a general good reason of why Twitter specifically is a problem for propaganda. There was a book in grade school in Texas that said that slaves were indentured servants and loved their job.
They love it.
And then somebody came out like, what are you doing? You're teaching kids in the fifth grade that this is history? And then obviously the books got retracted. But talk about propaganda. Little black kids sitting in school talk about my mom's crazy. They had jobs. They love their job, mom. It says it right here in this book. And that's the history that they're taught. So
clearly,
this propaganda. Twitter is not the leader of propaganda.
Falsehood should not make it into textbooks. I agree with you on that.
I'm just saying, like, we call out everything. We can't just say Twitter is evil because Facebook is... It ain't just Twitter. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
No. Twitter. I know it's not just Twitter, but I think that when it comes to the big three, media companies or the big three technology/media companies, the ones that are based on advertising, Google, Twitter, and Facebook. When you look at Twitter, I think that they have done the least to combat.
They're the free speech wing of the free speech party.
Yeah. That's right. But that comes with a lot of downsides. I think it's fair to say that.
It's fair to say that. I just think. Absolutely. Yep. They should do better. Still happy that they're around.
All right, let's play a game. Donald Trump tweets, I will be interviewed by the Brody File on CBNN News tonight at 11 p.m. Enjoy. iPhone or Android phone?
That's an Android phone, I imagine.
Android. That's a good game.
No, that's an iPhone, my friends.
Winner, chicken dinner.
Winner. All right.
Nice.
Statement regard. This one's tougher. Statement regarding recent executive order concerning extreme vetting. Android or iPhone?
iPhone.
iPhone it is. All right, but I'll bet you get this one right.
If it has proper English and it doesn't say it's great, she's great, they're great, we're great, I already know what phone it is. This is a silly game.
Senators should focus their energies on ISIS, illegal immigration, and border security instead of always looking to start World War III.
Android.
That's an Android phone.
Android it is.
You're like I said, easy game. Easy game.
You're onto something with this.
Dollars to donuts, I'd be rich playing this game.
Somebody with aptitude and conviction should buy the fake news and failing New York Times and run it correctly or let it fall with dignity.
Android.
Yeah.
Anything that has a link to something verifiable and factual, iPhone. Anything that doesn't have a link.
All caps is a dead giveaway.
This is a game.
Although I'll also say that fold with dignity is an interesting
concept. With dignity.
I think you need to I'm going to try to apply that to my laundry tonight.
I saw it on a banner somewhere driving through
fold
the airport.
With dignity.
Yeah.
I'm going to wear a monocle when I fold my laundry from now
on. Yeah, no, I got to, as soon as I get home, I got to do laundry. I'm going to
fold
tough it one. With dignity this time.
Tough one. I promise that this is 2 days ago, that our administration will always have your back, will always be with you, and then a video of Trump at the Department of Justice.
Always is an all caps.
I'm going to go Android. iPhone. Only because it seems, I don't know. It just seems too well put together.
It's not
with
confrontational
the video.
Enough. It's,
so yeah, the video kind of throws me off.
But it's got a lot of caps in it.
Maybe it's an Android true. Somebody gave him the video.
Okay, so Michael says iPhone, Android. Phil, Android, Owen.
Android.
Android, and the answer is iPhone.
They got me.
I don't think he embeds. I don't think he embeds content too often.
That's what I was saying. Anything with a link in it isn't him. I should have stuck to my own rule.
Yeah, right. Usually he's just, he's just reacting to something.
Twitter is good for a game.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, of course there are benefits to Twitter. I don't want to have my point misconstrued. I just think that they can do a lot better. And, Twitter is one of these sites that treats a Breitbart link equal to that of a New York Times link, and I don't necessarily know
that about it. And I'm the guy who's been saying Twitter should shut down for 2 years because I am the focus of an amazing amount of abuse on Twitter. But I do think that that is the merit of Twitter, that it is a free-for-all, and as long as you understand it, there is a problem because the media often treats 10 tweets as a news story. Twitter's going crazy about... Well, of course Twitter's going crazy about something. They always are going crazy about something. That's what Twitter is. It's an outrage engine. But if you understand kind of what its role is, I think it does provide a very interesting window into the president, a window into the alt services, EPA. This is the water cooler conversation for the United States of America right now.
Yeah. I mean, if some of those rogue accounts are true, isn't it great that we have them?
Yeah.
What did you say, Nunez? Next story?
Yes, he said next story.
Yeah,
no,
sure.
He didn't.
Yeah.
Putting words in his mouth, Mr. Owen.
You didn't hear him?
JJ Stones.
You didn't hear him? Check his mic. Check his mic. He's good. I heard what he said.
I hear you. You're coming in loud and clear.
I mean, this story. Hugo Barra, who was really at Google, was their kind of demo guy. You may remember him from Google IOs. He was always showing Android stuff. And then unaccountably 3 years ago, he left Google and moved to China to work at Xiaomi. Now, then we heard last week, he said, I'm leaving Xiaomi to do something exciting and new. And news came out this week that he is joining Facebook as the VP of virtual reality.
Good for Facebook. Hugo's a great guy. Super talented.
You know him? Yeah.
They do.
I don't know him, but my sense every time I saw him talk, I just loved him. I thought he was down to earth. He was smart. He was a great presenter.
Yeah, good guy. World needs more people named Hugo. Everything about it is good.
What's interesting is that he's a smart guy. He's putting his money on VR, which I think at this point, and Facebook, Oculus, which, between the lawsuit, Palmer Luckey's odd behavior, and it's lagging a little bit behind the HTC Vive, wouldn't be my bet on the horse that's going to come in first on this.
This is way too early to be a horse race, though. It's not zero sum yet. Like the whole industry
absolutely.
Is going to explode 10,000x over where it is right now, and then we'll pick the winner.
Fair enough.
What
Zuckerberg said also that I thought was interesting, Hugo shares my belief that virtual and augmented reality will be the next computing platform. And I've been saying this for a while. I think augmented HoloLens kind of stuff is really going to be a big part. And Oculus currently is not. It's just VR.
Yeah.
So I think that that is, and Tim Cook has said several times now that Apple's very interested in augmented reality. I think augmented reality, the idea that you see what's around you, but it's superimposed on top of it is additional material, whether it's a Minecraft village or a reputation score. I like that.
VR is 3D to me. It's something that everybody is hyping on, and then X-Dears is dead. Agreed. Augmented reality, I feel like, is a legit thing that could go forward in the future. But VR is just like, hey, let's put out some computing power and do some things and sell some stuff and promise people stuff because we have nothing else to do with our money for the next 4 years. But yeah, like just like 3D. Everything's going to be 3D. And they're still making 3D movies, but they're not making 3D TVs anymore. And it's just,
The first time I saw a 3D TV, I was like, this is crap. It's not going to catch on.
And you were right.
I was right. And first time I saw VR, I was like, this is going to be a real thing.
It's pretty
thing.
Exciting.
It really is. Like, it's not going to be nearly as big as AR because, augmented reality is going to change the world. Like, everything is going to be AR.
I think VR, the bloom goes off the rose fairly quickly, right? Do you spend a lot of time playing VR games?
I do, but I'm such a nerd.
See, okay. Case, what do you do? Give you an example of regular people. My friend got VR.
Yeah.
They set up the room. It was awesome. We all went over there and played it. What has it been, 3-4 months now? You ask them, and they've moved stuff back in a room, and nobody's come back over to play. And like, it's one of those things.
It's awkward. It was the Nintendo Wii of gaming for a while.
Like, I guess it's.
And right now, it's a pretty isolating experience too, right? Social VR hasn't really taken off, and I think the limitation of VR in the long run is that it's primarily an entertainment tool. So, you know, if you want to play games or be in a fantasy world or take that to a more extreme place, then it's great for that. But when it comes to business and making money, augmented reality is going to be the productivity tool that might replace the desktop in your office or something like that. So I think. At least from what I've tried, augmented reality seems a lot farther away than VR because, at least VR with, let's say Project Alloy, for instance, they have self-contained headsets and the resolution is there. And, they're solving some of the biggest problems, like the screen door effect and stuff like that. I think with AR, the resolution isn't there. The computing power is not there. You know, there's one dev kit, the HoloLens. I haven't tried Magic Leap and most people haven't. But, it's still, I'm not sure if we can actually call that.
We can all agree that we are in the Atari 2600 days of VR and AR. I mean, it's very early days.
Yeah, but it moves faster than it used to, in the 2600 days, right? So I think if we said we're 3 years out, right? We're not 10 years out.
3 years is not long.
Yeah, we're 3 years out. Or maybe even as little as two.
Have you played
from what? Ubiquitous VR? Is that...
Not, let's say, ubiquitous, but like mainstream products that have like strong AR, wearable AR capability.
You know what?
I think 3 years.
Walking down the street with a relatively comfortable pair of glasses, and I don't look like a complete jerk.
Yeah.
Other than the glasses don't. I mean, otherwise I might.
Right. I'm just trying to wait till we get contacts and I stick them in my eye, and that's how I see.
Well, that's a little farther off.
I mean, look, so
that's what I want.
Yeah.
The Snap glasses, right? The spectacles.
They're pretty cool,
but
they're just
cool. They're not AR at all. But there's like you are wearing stuff on your face that's like streaming and stuff, and they actually look cool. I mean, dorky cool, but cool.
Yeah.
That form factor, you can put a lot more into in 2 or 3 years from now.
They're a lot less dorky than Google Glass. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. And we did, we were one of the first developers on Google Glass. Like, we've done a bunch of stuff.
Have you played with the Magic Leap?
Can't talk about the Magic Leap, but I have played with a HoloLens.
Okay. HoloLens is interesting. It's still, just like you said, Mike, it's at the earliest stages. So it's primitive compared to where it will be. But you can see the premise. You can see the promise.
The promise is so there.
Yeah.
You can play with it. Yeah, it's very primitive, but it doesn't take any imagination to see what this is like 5 years from now.
It will
just be world-changing.
Right.
I liked in our chat room, Reverend Dana Scout said, and this is, I think, this sums it up very well. Let me see if I could find the quote. He said, VR is the vacation. AR is your life, is the way it is. I didn't do you justice. VR is a vacation. AR is a life choice. I think that's accurate, actually. It's a very different use.
I like that.
Take a break, but then we're going to come back. Lots more to talk about. Owen J.J. Stone, IQMZ.com. Phil Libin, great to have you from General Catalyst. where he's a managing director.
And actually, I've got exciting news we'll talk about after the break. I am now officially a cyborg.
Oh, yeah? Whoa. Yeah.
I'm looking. I'm looking. Yeah. I'm looking. I don't see any blinking lights.
I'll show you.
All right.
That's why he doesn't need food.
It is connected to that.
I want to do everything Phil's doing. You're looking great. I can't believe
you're not allowed to do anything Phil's doing. You saying that, you leave Phil alone. No.
And Michael Nunez from Gizmodo.com. Our show today brought to you by Betterment. I know you know about this, Phil. Everybody is very excited about this new automated investing services. You do it in software, and one of the best, Betterment. They manage more than $5.5 billion, 180,000 customers. The portfolio Betterment creates for you is designed to achieve optimal results no matter what level of investment. And you can start with $0. Well, what, I guess you have to put in $1. You can't really invest $0, but there's no minimum to sign up. Betterment's goal-based investing framework and advice algorithm will let you know if you're on track in just seconds. And it's a fraction of what you'd pay for traditional financial services. Up to 600% less on fees. You keep more of your money. You know, all those fees come right off the top. You have to earn that much more just to break even. There are no trade fees, no transaction fees, no rebalancing fees. And I love it. The Betterment dashboard lets you sync in your other investments, your outside investments. So you have one page where you see your total net worth, your total diversification, your total retirement plan. And I love that. They do automated rebalancing. That's really important. I think people invest and forget, and they then get really unbalanced, and that's not good in the long run. They diversify you. The fees are lower. This is important. Betterment customers can expect 4.3% higher returns than a typical DIY investor. Don't do it yourself. Do it the better way with Betterment. They've got smart deposits, so automatically you invest excess cash. That's a great kind of transparent way to build your retirement nest egg. They have a retire guide that provides a consolidated view of your retirement and calculates your retirement gap. And of course, when you make a deposit or you get dividends, they will automatically allocate it appropriately for your age, your risk tolerance, your plan for the future. They do tax loss harvesting too. That lets you get lower taxes and increase after-tax returns. End-to-end investment means faster cash transfers, tax forms available at the earliest possible date. And, of course, it's totally secure. And if you need help with a human, yeah, there's humans. They've got support specialists on a call 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Investing involves risk, but do it right. Get 1 month managed free when you make an initial deposit of $10,000 or more at betterment.com/twit. That's betterment.com/twit. We thank them for their support this week in tech. Cyborg Phil Libin. Is this why you don't have to eat?
It's related to it.
Is this why there's a plug coming out of your butt?
No, that's totally different.
I'm sorry. Yeah. That came out completely wrong. Oh, that's came out wrong. That came out wrong, too. Okay, just tell us, Cyborg how?
Hey, check it out. I'm very excited.
He's unbuttoning his jacket, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, boy.
I have.
Okay. Yes. This is He's my first stripping ever. Down. He's rolling up his sleeve.
I have a data port on my arm.
He has a what?
Yep. What?
Check it out.
He's got a data
first,
port.
This is my first port.
What? Oh, my goodness.
He literally does. Yep. What?
There's a needle going into my arm, a very small needle.
Is that permanent or is this temporary?
2 weeks at a time. Sticks on for 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
And it gives me, just real-time glucose monitoring, which is, you know, kind of boring.
Oh, that's good. I would like that.
The first time that I have, like, real-time data.
Are you type 1 diabetic? Type 2?
I am, thankfully...
You're not?
Not. I'm only doing this as a data nerd to kind of collect everything. But it's doing... It does
that can't be your blood sugar.
It is. I'm kind of have the blood sugar of a ninja.
He's got a blood sugar of 4.
Well, this is European
standard. I'd be passing out right now. Oh, that's not okay.
Yeah,
that's
it's like 65.
Oh, 65 is good. Yeah. 4 means you're dead.
Yeah, 4 means you're dead. Yeah, this is like European. It's not available in the U.S. yet. So that's why I told not, German.
You want to be under 100. I know this much because I'm type 2 diabetic, and you don't want to be too much under 100.
Right.
But 4 would be too much. But, 65 would be good. Yeah. That's good.
So,
you're
Phil,
very
can
good.
You feel? Do you feel it like throughout the day? I mean, that looks kind of uncomfortable.
No, it's great. It's really well designed. It's a thing made by Abbott. Not available in the U.S. yet.
Is your arm sore?
No.
Well, is it not NFC? Because there's no, You didn't. You just touched it to it.
It's it's NFC. So if you have an Android phone, you don't even need that. You can just do it right from your phone. You just touch your phone to it. But I have an iPhone, so it doesn't work.
See, Apple is killing people.
And do you trust the information that it's giving you?
Yeah, so it's supposed,
I know it's kind of a weird question.
So it's approved in a bunch of European countries, and it's supposed to be accurate enough for insulin dosing. So it is as accurate as a blood
test. If I were going to use this, I'd prick my finger and I'd compare.
You could do
them
both, yeah. So this actually has the strip reader.
Oh, it does
so
it
could,
as well.
You could calibrate it if you want, okay. But I haven't tried that. And I'm just excited because I'm 45 years old, and I now finally have like a data port on my body. Hopefully, the first of many.
Wow.
How did you get it?
I just want to know why. To get it?
No, I had it smuggled in.
So many
can
questions.
Can I get it smuggled in? Because I hate pricking my finger. It's the worst
Leo,
thing.
You're not getting a date. You're not getting nothing Phil's got, Leo. You just stop asking Phil where he buys, where he shops.
I'm going to do the data port.
Phil is
do it all.
But it's crazy.
It's super cool. You can see, it's real time. So I can eat an orange and watch what happens. You can look at this thing. You can kind of see it go up. You can see how long it stays up. You can
Diabetics desperately need something like that.
We're
in the dark ages. We're still drawing blood by pricking our fingers and then measuring the blood. That's primitive.
If you were diabetic, I would think that was the best thing in the world for you. But if you have no need.
No, I'm type 2 diabetic.
Medically, you're still not allowed to get it. Phil, I have no real need.
I have no
just
need.
Out here for
he just
funsies.
Likes to measure his.
What happens if you punch somebody and flex your muscle too tight, or I don't know.
I haven't done that in hours.
I want a data port.
Yeah. Yeah.
Please, Daddy, can I have a data port?
No. You're not even allowed to go to Europe anymore because I can't trust you. You'll be at some little corner shop getting plugs.
I'm going to Europe in the fall. I could probably get one.
We can smuggle one in for you.
No.
But you don't leave it in there?
2 weeks.
2 weeks, because it would get infected or something.
Well, it's by Abbott. So they're one of the biggest medical device companies. Yeah. Maybe they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
Look.
You change it after 2 weeks?
I feel like you're going to get tracked. The next thing you know, Phil's going to be leader of the robot gang.
I have
brainwashed.
I have port
There's
envy.
All kinds of stuff they're doing.
My name is LaPorte.
Whoa. Does a professional need to put it in?
A doctor would put it in, right? You don't just go, bam.
Yeah, you put it in yourself.
You do?
Yeah. You put it in yourself.
Yeah.
Wow.
The needle's tiny. And it comes with this handle, and you basically just go like that, and it's in there. It doesn't hurt at all. It's fine. There's a startup in San Francisco that's working on a similar thing, but that's not out yet.
How accurately do you have to position it?
Not at all, because it's not going into your blood vessel. It's just it's intramuscular. It's fine.
Wow.
It's great. Look, the key to surviving the inevitable eventual robot uprising is just to be on the right side when it happens.
Be a robot.
Be on the right side when it happens. You may as well start.
Wow, I'm excited. Google has banned, 1.7 billion ads removed. Many of them, some are, just payday loan ads, which Google decided they weren't going to do those anymore. Some are fake news. Some are trying to trick you. Some are malware. But that's all. I mean, I guess if you count them one by one, that's not a whole lot. I mean, I don't know how many ads Google places every year. And
it still sounds like a lot regardless. It feels like a lot. I'm sure it's not to them.
There are ads.
Well, Do they say how many they have total?
It was more than double the number that they had removed
780
the year
million
prior.
Last year.
Any idea how many total ads they do in a year?
It doesn't say. They took down 5 million payday loans since they changed the rules in July. Mm. Here's the one that is most scary. 112 million of them were trick-to-click ads designed to look like official Microsoft system error notifications. We've all seen them, and designed to get you to download malware. These are really bad, and there were 112 million of them. The problem with automated ad networks like Google's is nobody's watching. Nobody's approving the ads. You just buy the ads online and you put them up there. And so it's fairly easy for somebody to put malware in these ads.
Yeah. What's the problem with just ads?
Ads are bad. Ad tech is bad.
Kind of are. Yeah.
On the other hand, you got to monetize somehow.
Money's got to come from somewhere. Everything's free.
So, people want free
ads.
I like doing ad supported free media. I think it's more democratic. You don't have to have $5 to pay me to get the show. I've often thought, I wonder if we could make it if we had a paywall, but I don't want to take the chance. We, you know, when I started, I've told this story many times. When I started, we thought, oh, I'll just ask people to donate. But Patreon wasn't around then. There really weren't the methods to do it. I just had a PayPal tip jar.
Mm-hmm.
And while we got very, I thought, very generous donations, I was doing about $9,000 a month. That was enough to support me and not what, we have 26 employees. We have another 30 contract employees. There's no way we could build what we have now without ads. And I think it's better for me anyway. And I think ad supported media is a good thing
for now.
Do you think that we'll be able to get off of that at some point?
Hopefully soon, like this data port, instead of just doing glucose, we'll do like glucose and serotonin. And then when it detects that my serotonin levels are particularly high, that I've just seen something delightful.
Ching.
Yeah, it just automatically pays whatever I'm looking
at. Oh, that would be wild.
Yeah, that's what it's.
Yay, poor people with no money or a bank account or
no, you don't get to be happy.
Get to consume
you
media.
You don't get
no
to be happy.
No joy for you.
Well, no
get
serotonin for you.
Hey, whoa.
This is totally progressive. Like, all of this is going to be paid by, like, the people that actually have enough money to be walking around with these things in our arms when we're happy. Like, everyone else just gets it for free. Like, this is as close to Star Trek as we're going
to
get.
So I could say to people who really like the show, hey, do me a favor, wear a data port that measures your serotonin and put $100 in an account, and we'll get paid only if you're happy. How many of you, let's ask the chat room.
It's not real. That's not going to happen. That's not a thing. That's a Phil fantasy. That's Phil, again, making everything sound delightful, and it's just not. That sounds so good that it's like, yeah, sure, no. No.
I'm sorry for
making things sound delightful.
you're
right.
You should be.
Yeah,
sorry.
Come on.
I am deeply ashamed.
The world sucks.
Oh man.
No, you know what was interesting though that
too
was
much
that
positivity.
Google said it took more than 1,000 employees to
wow.
remove these ads.
Wow.
And so, you know, we've talked a lot about fake news, and obviously this has been a kind of a politically driven show, which none of us are happy about, but unfortunately that's just the way
the
it is.
And
I think it gives you a little bit of insight into how difficult it is to combat misleading, Google called some of the ads tabloid cloakers, but, you know, misleading ads or fake news or just basically the amount of people that it takes to go through all of this content and to determine what is legitimate and what's not actually takes a lot of manpower. And so although this is, you know, obviously just a Google press release that, that they sent out into the world so that they could be praised for doing such a good job of removing these ads, I think that there is, the hidden takeaway for me was just that they revealed the amount of people that it took to make this happen. So as a journalist, you take that number and you can begin to cross-reference that at other companies that are doing similar things, either with advertising or with with content.
Interesting number here, and even an interesting word, tabloid cloaking. Tabloid cloaking has to be the euphemism of the year for fake news. They didn't want to say fake news, but they disabled 1,300 accounts for that. That's a lot of Macedonian websites. I do think 112 million malware ads, you know, out of 1.7 billion that were removed, that's not that bad. 5 million payday loans, 80 million ads for deceiving and shocking users.
Yeah.
Is that belly fat? What is that? That could be the ads where it says Tom Hanks is moving to your town, those ads.
Oh, that's what those things. Those things are horrible.
Those are horrible.
That would be shocking.
Those are worse.
And then 68 million ads for unapproved pharmaceuticals. What do you think that could be, unapproved pharmaceuticals?
That's that stuff that tells me I can lose weight like Phil by eating imaginary air bars for the next 4 weeks. You
right.
too could be a robot cyborg like Phil. Just take this oxygen pill for $44.99.
No, I'm going to do what Phil does. Don't knock it. I'm going to do it.
You know, just watching some of the comments scroll by, I want to point out that I'm not entirely serious about the serotonin.
No, but I think that's
thing.
You know what?
Yeah, I'm like half serious.
We have to look for new ways of monetizing.
Yeah, I think that's right.
The world is open to that.
I'm gonna hack into his bio stream and get me some serotonin checks from Phil. That's what I'm gonna do. Working on how to get into that little system right now.
Oh, and you and I have so much to discuss after this show.
You got to be on his show.
We have so much to talk about.
He got me to say some things that I will never regret for the rest of my life.
True story.
It's true.
Whoa, I got to go listen to those interviews.
Check. Think about Leo in the Redwood Forest and imagine all the wonderful things that could happen.
I wasn't microdosing, baby.
400-year-old trees and
that's no microdose. The world. Yahoo is now, and I think it's about time, facing a probe from the Security and Exchange Commission.
I was pissed about this.
They were half a billion accounts were breached by Yahoo, and they neglected to mention it when they put the company up for sale. Verizon made a large bid for Yahoo, not knowing about the data breaches, and that's why the SEC is investigating.
Yep.
They feel that that should have been reported sooner to investors and, of course, to potential buyers as well.
Well, and to users as soon as it happened.
Customers, yeah.
You know, it's funny. The SEC. I think that's just because that's not the SEC's bailiwick. They're covering investors, but absolutely, yep. That might be an FTC investigation. Because we need to know too. And I think that it needs to be stated pretty clearly by regulators that it's not okay to have a data breach and not tell your customers in a prompt fashion.
This really ought to be illegal, not doing, because it's actually super bad for security. Like this is how all of the hacks spread, because a lot of it is just reused usernames and passwords.
Yep.
Once one of your accounts has been hacked, every account that you've reused that password is compromised completely. The vast majority of people reuse the vast majority of their passwords. Like, it's exactly this kind of stuff that leads to hacks like all the way down the line. It is completely ridiculous and inappropriate not to notify users, and not just notify them, but notify them and reset passwords immediately.
Well, and the good companies do. They do as soon as something, LastPass, when they had a hint that something was going on, they reset passwords.
Yeah. I mean, we did too. And
I remember that. Evernote did that.
It was painful.
Yeah.
Super painful, right. But like we had to do it.
The thing that kills when investigations and stuff like this happen, someone needs to get fired. Like, you know, someone needs to lose their job, quote unquote, be shamed. And it needs to be more than one person.
I have to
tell you. So many times we hear these things and we get upset about it. And then they go off to go be the CTO of something else. And you're like, well, you weren't doing your – that's a legit fail of your responsibility on multiple things, especially right down to the user. Because I had two Yahoo accounts. And the reason I knew I got hacked is because I had like six people email me one day like, yo – your old account is like blowing me up. I forgot that I even had the account. I kept it for Flickr, so I never closed it. But it was sending out all kinds of nasty junk to people. And luckily, I have friends in the tech industry that would say, oh, well, this is like, yeah, I mean, some shady stuff. Go clean it up. And I changed my password.
But if that's happening
to millions of people, that's insane.
The head that needed to roll, and it's probably too late now that Verizon's buying it, was Marissa Myers. She knew. The CEO knew. And in fact,
has that been confirmed that she knew?
Well, this is according to a former Yahoo executive, but here's the smoking gun. Alex Stamos, who is a very good security guy, was this chief information security officer at Yahoo in 2015. He quit. He'd been on the job for 1 year. He resigned. He went on to Facebook, where he works now. And the smoking gun is that's when he learned that not only was there a breach, but that not his team, the security team, but another team of engineers had written what was effectively a Trojan on the Yahoo mail server at the request of the federal government. And his team discovered it and said, we've been hacked. And the other team said, oh, no, that's us. And it's, I would say, almost certain at this point that not only did Marissa Meyer know, but she must have made the decision. Let's keep this under our hat until the sale goes through.
I don't know the details.
Maybe not.
I think it's fine firing people if they've actually broken any laws or sending them to jail if they've broken any laws.
There's just an insider.
I do think that the more like the super useful outcome is like new laws and regulations that very clearly make this kind of thing illegal for next.
And you don't always have to break law to be fired, right?
No. Of course, you can fire people for any reason. You shouldn't send people to jail unless previous laws have been broken.
Say jail. I just said fire. I got to at least get a fire. I just want somebody to be.
And she's with you on that.
There
is leverage because she has a fairly large golden parachute. I think
that's what I'm talking about.
I actually don't know the details around Marissa about this. I have no idea whether she did anything wrong or not. So I don't want to speculate.
I do wonder what the new administration is going to do about stuff like this. I guess it's up to Congress to make a law. But I feel like they're
good luck.
Exactly. I feel like they're distracted by other matters.
I think it's safe to say that, yeah.
It's not, so it doesn't have to go through Congress, right? The the various executive branch agencies can...
Even less likely, if you ask me. I just feel like that's not where the focus is right now. When Rudolph Giuliani is your security guru, doesn't bode well for... And I have to say, that could be a time bomb. That could be the not only ignoring information, increasingly solid information about Russian hacking and Russian influence in the election, not only ignoring that, but kind of appointing somebody with with credentials, just inadequate credentials, as your cybersecurity czar, as Rudolph Giuliani, kind of doesn't bode well. And I think that could end up being the real time bomb, is ignoring the security issues that this country faces, not just from government actors, but from bad guys, organized crime. We're sitting ducks out here. And unless you tell companies things like, I agree 100% with you, you've got to alert your users about data breaches. That's not good.
Alert and
reset.
Yeah,
I mean, this administration seems to be technologically incompetent. You know, remember that Sean Spicer, one of the top aides of the Trump administration this week, tweeted out, I think on more than one occasion, some sort of alphanumeric code.
Twice.
To something.
That's clearly a password. Anybody who's ever seen a LastPass generated password, Spicer twice tweeted his password. Two different passwords. And I know what happened. I can tell you what happened. Spicer's trying to tweet. He doesn't remember his password. He copies it and then forgets that he had it on the clipboard and pastes it in. If that's not a password, I don't know what it is. AQENBPUU. And then there's another one that has a number and it was clearly a password. Tweets it twice.
It's actually Elvish. He's just speaking Elvish.
Right. Right. Well, it extends far beyond, beyond this particular individual. I think that, the fact that the administration refers to, quote, the cyber that there are a number of different indications that just show that they have no understanding of the technological complexities of these platforms, of these systems. And I just think that there is a huge gap between sort of the level of competence that we need and the importance of this stuff, right? An understanding of how important all of this stuff is in our everyday world and the way that it's treated by the administration. So, tweeting what seems to be a password was like it's mind-blowing.
Icing on the cake.
Calm down, Michael, before the internet gets shut down. So we got to look at a way to shut the internet down. The internet might have to be shut down, So be careful.
Well, I guess it's right. Possible.
At this point, it wouldn't surprise me.
It's possible he just sat on his phone, but it sure looked like a password to me. Anyway.
Yeah, and it just shows a lack of consideration, right? I mean, whether it was a butt tweet or a mistakenly tweeted password, it just shows that there is like no consideration for these things.
Michael, I totally agree with you that people in government probably don't know nearly enough about the cyber as they should. I'm really not sure that the current administration is unique in that lack of experience. I'm not sure that the Democrats recently have been any more competent.
And certainly there are plenty of members of Congress who don't know a thing. Most of them don't know a thing about technology. But I'll give you an example. And remember, Congress abandoned its department. What was it? The Department of Technology Information. They had a really great group about 4 years ago that was advising them on technology. Actual technologists disbanded. But there's also the digital service, the U.S. Digital Service, USDS, which was started because the government did such a bad job with the Obamacare website. Remember that? It just didn't work at all. They had used government contractors. Mm-hmm. So the folks in Silicon Valley said, we need to help this.
Yep.
They created the U.S. Digital Service. A lot of people from Facebook and Google and Apple went to Washington, D.C., including our friend Matt Cutts from Google. And they not only fixed the healthcare websites, the insurance exchanges, but they've done the same for the Veterans Administration and digital immigration, college scorecard. They've really done a great job. I would hope this was under the Obama administration. I would hope the Trump administration would keep this going. There's no indication that they will. We'll watch with interest. Matt Cutts is currently interim director because the director is an appointed political position.
Mm-hmm.
So the existing director left on January 20th. Matt Cutts is interim director.
Yeah.
And I think they're doing great work, and everybody there is saying, keep us. We want to help.
Look, I hope it stays, and I hope we do all sorts of things to improve security at government and everywhere else. And
we need to.
To the extent possible, I think like trying really hard to not also score political points in this issue makes it more likely that the actual security will improve.
So let's not do that anymore. But I do think that the previous administration was at least somewhat more technically savvy.
Don't forget, you know, Obama moved to, I was looking for the story, I'm not sure if I found the exact one, but Obama moved to consolidate a bunch of the intelligence agencies. So mm-hmm. I remember, I think it was in the middle of last year, former President Obama said that there was a lack of communication between all of the intelligence agencies, so the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, and put a measure forward that would consolidate those intelligence agencies. I forget what the name of the new agency is. It was the cyber.
DNI.
Yeah, under the Director of National Intelligence. Yeah,
that's right. That's exactly what it was. So, there was at least some effort, or it was an indication of his understanding or his administration's understanding of the importance of this stuff. And I haven't really seen that. I've actually seen the opposite from the Trump administration, right?
Well,
he has discredited it.
Let's encourage, though. I agree with you, Phil. Let's be positive. Let's encourage him. You've got a great team at USDS. Let's keep that going. Let's keep doing more like that. Silicon Valley does want to help.
Absolutely.
Right? We want to help transparency. We want to help make government work. We want to help the government websites.
We want a moon base.
We want a moon base so we can move there. Let's take a little break. It's great to have you. Michael Nunez is here. He is from Gizmodo looking like a goose out there. He feels the need for speed. Let's put it that way. Also with us, Phil Libin. He's a Borg, but proud to be a cyborg. And also, of course, Owen J.J. Stone, who is still sporting the cat ears.
I was told in the chat, and I'm sure I'll hear this later on, that I am not to be taken seriously because of these ears. I think that I should be taken twice as serious because these are the ears of my child, and I'm representing her in all things. So my love for her and all things that I do, even in work, might seem silly to you, but it keeps a reminder in my brain to stay out of that bubble that y'all live in with cyborgs and no food.
He is representing the Ute of this nation.
The peoples.
The Ute.
Man of the peoples.
You're a man of the Ute. He's a Uteful person. Our show
did you even finish that drink?
Yeah, it was good. Would you like?
Okay.
I have another.
No. We're
I'm
good.
On my
don't
third,
send me one.
Actually.
Don't send me one. I don't want it. We're good.
Oh, I got to get that.
Huh?
I got to get those. I almost ordered them the other day.
Oh, yeah. We'll
talk
about the Euros. Yeah, these are cool. I'll tell you all about them. I have them and I love them. In fact, I set my mom up with Euros as well. But before we do that, I want to – not yet, Karsten. Let's save the Euro because first we want to take a look at what happened this week on Twit.
Previously on Twit.
A team out of the University of Utah is working on creating glasses, smart glasses, with liquid-based lenses that will allow the wearer to automatically shift their focus based on the proximity of what they're looking at.
And the idea is that you'll never have to get new glasses again. You'll always wear those ugly glasses for the rest of your life.
That's prototype.
iOS Today.
Lenny Inaco told us about this.
Oh, you got it.
I got it. And it is a very special stand for your Apple Watch. Oh, it's an old Mac. I love this. What time is it? Oh, I don't know. Let me check my Mac. They were so much smaller back then.
Yeah,
I know.
The new screensavers.
Welcome to Game of Geeks. We're going to play a little game called Touch My Tech.
Yeah, I'm kind of nervous that I'm putting the blindfold on.
As you should be. I am a Catholic priest. In 3, 2, 1, reach for your tech.
Oh, great.
Describe it.
I'm going to say it's a Motorola phone.
Oh, actually, yes, it was the Motorola, and I'll give you 5 points for that.
Do I need the model number?
If you can give me a...
Come on!
We fondled a lot of tech.
We fondled a lot of tech.
Twit. Some assembly required.
Great. Says the charge might last 24 hours. So then we're going to have like the extra battery backup, like hanging from our glasses.
No, we'll have battery earrings.
Or battery nose.
Oh, battery nose. That's a good idea.
I want those glasses. Megan Maroney has a look at the week ahead. Megan?
Thank you, Leo. Here is a look at just a few of the stories we'll be watching this week. It's another big week for earnings. Facebook, Match Group, Amazon, and Sony will all deliver reports on what they've been up to when it comes to earnings and losses. And as always, we will try to read everything we can into those numbers. One of those companies announcing quarterly results will be Facebook, and they will also be officially a teenager this week. 13 years ago, Mark Zuckerberg wrote the code for Facebook, and now he would like to celebrate February 4th as National Friends Day. So tell your friends what you think of them, unless, of course, you've unfriended them in the last year because you disagree with everything that they stand for. If that is the case, why don't you try to reach out in real life and ask them out for tea? This week, Twitter shuts Dashboard. That's the app that businesses could use to manage their Twitter accounts. Businesses use it to schedule tweets, get insights, and engage with customers and community without accidentally tweeting out their passwords. But Twitter is shutting down Dashboard, and they say that they hope to someday bring these same features to the broader Twitter community. And finally, YouTube will begin a broad rollout of Super Chat. That is the new tool that lets you pay real money to pin your comments on your favorite YouTuber's live stream.
Oh, my God.
So put your money where your mouth is, for real. Jason Howell and I will cover all of this and a whole lot more all week on Tech News Today, each and every weekday at 4 p.m. Pacific. And that is a look at the week ahead.
Thank you, Megan Maroney. Every Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2400 UTC, 2300 UTC on Twitter. What do you think of that? Paying to get your comments higher on YouTube.
This may cause me to leave my very first comment on YouTube.
That's just, I don't get it. Are they, maybe they just stopped making enough money.
I was thinking about those goggles you guys are wearing. And how much did you pay Calacanis to put those on?
With the googly eyes? The googly eye blindfolds? Those were fun.
They're worried about my cat phones. You guys should check out these googly eyes they had on over there.
Next time you're out here, we're going to play Game of Geeks with you. I want to play with you. I think you'd have a lot of fun. Our show today brought to you by the Eero. You're thinking of getting these. This is the revolution in Wi-Fi right now. People have been settling for so long for Wi-Fi that buffers, has dead zones. You know, you walk around and then, hey, the Wi-Fi's down. Oh, no, I got to go over here. I got to stand over here. Finally, Wi-Fi that works. And I have to say, I use Eero and it changed my life. I nonstop complaints from my wife and my kid saying, the internet's down, the internet's not down, it's just the Wi-Fi. And I tried everything, at power line networking, I got expansion units. Nothing worked till I got the Eero. Here's how it works. You get the first Eero. You can buy an individual Eero, or you buy, and I would recommend this, buy all three. They say each Eero is good for about 1,500 square feet. You pair the first Eero, it becomes your router. So you plug it into your cable modem or your DSL modem, and now this is doing your routing. Then you fire up the Eero app on your phone and you place the other Eeros. Our house is so big, I ended up having five Eeros. But what's nice is my house is bathed in Wi-Fi. No more dead zones, no more buffering. Everything's super fast. Eero also brings a lot of advantages. The Eeros are automatically updated. In fact, they just pushed out their new 2.0 version of TrueMesh. This is the next generation of wireless mesh technology. Increased speed, increased performance, increased reliability. The Eero automatically does things like quality of service. It sees you're watching TV. It shapes the connectivity. It's dual band. It has 2.4 and 5 gigahertz, but you don't have to know about that. It'll automatically pick the best channel and the best frequency. You see each device that's on your Eero in the app. You can assign it to a person. And my favorite thing is I can tell my Echo, pause Michael's Wi-Fi. When it's 10 o'clock at night and I want him to go to bed, I say, pause Michael's Wi-Fi. And his devices are no longer online. Mine work fine, but his are no longer online. You can also ask your Echo to find your phone. It knows which of the Eero base stations your phone is paired to. It says, well, the last time I saw your phone, it was in the living room. That's great. You can also turn off the Eero LED if you want. You could say, hey, Echo, dim the LED. The phone app is great. The software is great. There always updates all the time. And so the other thing I did is I set up Eero on at my mom's house. I was out for Christmas. She's in Rhode Island. And she was having trouble with her Wi-Fi, which I knew because every time I FaceTimed her, it would pause and freeze and stutter. So I can actually see her Eeros from here. So I fire up the account, and I can see which Eero network. I can say, oh, let me see his, and I can see which of the Eeros is up for her. She was never able to get Wi-Fi out in her studio. She likes to weave and do textiles and painting. She has a studio out back. She says, yeah, I stopped going out in the studio because I can't get the internet out there. I can't use my iPad out there. Now she can go anywhere at all, and it just works great. I love the Eero. We've got a deal for you. Of course we do. We got free overnight shipping. So if you're in a hurry to get good Wi-Fi, go to eero.com. Select overnight shipping at the checkout and use the offer code TWIT, and boom, it goes away. The price goes away. It's free overnight shipping from eero.com. Very impressed with what Eero has done. The next generation of Wi-Fi. And I've tried them all, really, and this is the one to get, Phil. You will be very happy with it.
I'm sold.
For your support. Yeah. It's thank goodness, you know, because this is, Wi-Fi's been getting worse and worse. I think it's because everybody in the neighborhood has Wi-Fi too, right?
Especially if you're on Comcast versus Fios.
Hey, I got to complain about something. So I have Comcast. And
I feel sorry for you.
I know. They have a terabyte bandwidth cap. They said, oh, don't worry. Nobody ever goes over a terabyte. So in October, I went over a terabyte. And they do a man-in-the-middle JavaScript attack. You're just surfing along, and all of a sudden the pop-up says, this is Comcast. You went over a terabyte. You're at 90%. Wow. You're at 100%. You're at 120%. As they say, and then they go, but don't worry. We're not going to charge you. You get three times, and then we're going to charge you. And then so I went, oh, gosh, I don't know what's going on. But then the next month, it was back down to my normal, about 500 gigabytes a month. That's normal. Didn't change anything. The next month, it's back to it, 1,400 gigabytes. Then it's down to 400 gigabytes. I'm not changing anything, A. So I think whatever they're measuring is BS. But there's no way you can verify it, right? You just have to, that's whatever they say. I look on my Eeros, it doesn't say that. And then B, they're doing a man-in-the-middle attack, injecting JavaScript into my browser at their whim. All right. Rant
it's over. Bullshit. I'll
that's the word.
Yeah, I'll take your side on that one. Phil?
I don't have those problems. I got Fios.
What do you say?
Nice.
Yeah.
Do you have a bandwidth cap on Fios?
I don't know. I'll be doing what I want to do, and ain't nobody ever caused me no problems, so I assume that I do not. And one day, if I get to be like you and download the world, which I don't know how you're doing it at home when you're sitting there at work all day, download, how is that possible? I don't even know how that's possible that you're hitting that at home.
I mean, I believe it's possible, but it should be consistent. I'm not changing. I'm not like, oh, this week we're not going to watch Netflix. It's the same.
I don't know how you are doing it at home.
That's a 300% change.
Yeah.
Twice. I don't get it.
I have no idea how much I use. I should look at some point.
I don't either.
You'll find out if you're Comcast.
Yeah, I am.
I've lucked out, yeah. In Brooklyn, we have, like, pretty good. Optimum is the service provider that I use.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I think the Netflix ISP rating or whatever the index that they have ranks it among the best, and they protect their customers pretty well. So I've been happy with that. I've heard you know, some horror stories from people who subscribe to other
companies.
Who
is worried about the new FCC chairman Ajit Pai? There's been a back and forth about where he stands on net neutrality. He certainly has voted. He was a Republican FCC commissioner appointed by President Obama. President Trump has raised him to the chairman of the FCC, and he is reputedly, you know, I think it's unfair to say he's against net neutrality. He's against, and I think we're all against, this government regulation of the internet, and he would like a free market and a competitive market to fix that. But he also is very clear. He says, I support an open, free internet. I'm not against the open internet. It's unknown. He said some good things also. He wants, for instance, when utilities go up in the power poles, he wants to guarantee access to those poles to internet service providers. That's something our friend Dane Jasper of SonicNet has been lobbying for. That's a good thing. Anybody have any thoughts about Ajit Pai? We don't know anything yet. He hasn't done anything yet. We just, you know, we know it's likely that net neutrality is a dead issue.
I mean, he's been on the commission for a while,
right,
as you said.
He's one of the few history. Trump appointees who actually has a record.
Yeah, so he at least plausibly knows about the issue.
He seems quite smart, I'll be honest. I also, we had a little debate on Twig over this. I don't want to panic yet. Remember how we misunderstood Tom Wheeler. It turned out to be pretty darn good.
I mean, this is definitely, well, I don't know. I'm certainly not taking this as an opportunity to panic about this. Let's just see. Let's see how it goes.
Right.
In general, he probably wants to optimize for close to the same things that I'd like to optimize for, which is, you know, more internet access for more people for less money.
He's a classic Republican. At this point, I would welcome that. I would be thrilled. You know, he's against government, wants small governments, doesn't want a lot of regulation, but believes in an open internet and believes that we do have to, you know, preserve the openness of the internet.
I want more, good to me. Faster, cheaper internet for as many people as possible,
right,
and as many companies as possible. And if someone, if policies move against that, then I'll be opposed to it. And at this point, I just have no idea whether we're moving closer or further from that.
Well, I think he did send a joint letter. So he was one of the remaining commissioners to send a joint letter to the telecom industry's five largest lobby groups or lobbying groups that said that they had dissented against the you know, net neutrality decision made in 2015, and that they intended to remove them. The quote was as soon as possible. And so this happened in, I believe, December of last year. But the intention is that they will remove the net neutrality laws. I think they've gone on the record and said that.
GOP has also asked him to kill Tom Wheeler's plan to open cable boxes. I think it's probably safe to say we'll be renting that crappy Comcast cable box for the foreseeable future. I liked this idea, and I think Silicon Valley liked this idea of being able to use an Apple TV or a Roku in lieu of the set-top box provided by the cable company.
I hate that.
The cable company.
Yeah, it seems like a no-brainer, right? Like,
well,
I mean, the technology is there.
Here's the argument the cable companies have. They said, that's our product. The way the cable box presents the product to the consumer, that's what we offer. And that's how we, you know, in my Comcast TV guide, there's ads for, you know, I'll be scrolling channel 2, 3, 4, and then there's an ad for an on-demand movie, then 5, 6, 7, and then there's an ad for another on-demand movie. Comcast doesn't want to lose that. I would love to see that gone. I would love to have a choice. The DVR is terrible. Now, we do have cable card, and I use TiVos, so I'm able to use a TiVo. But I think that opening that up and giving us a choice and eliminating that, you know, $5, $6, $7 a month rental of a junk box.
It seems anti-competitive to
well, but it's
prevent.
There. But the argument is, why should Comcast or any cable company open up to competition? This is our business. This is our portal to the customer.
That's the free market.
I don't think they should open up to competition. I think that that's their product. That's what they're selling. And by the way of the dinosaur, they will kill themselves by waiting for a meteor to come and strike them, because people are already ditching those boxes left and right.
Well,
and
that's a good point.
And
just cutting the cord.
So the same way they do with everything else, they're slowly stabbing themselves in the foot. So no, I don't give a hoot and or any whether or not they open up these boxes, because at one day it's going to be too late. And they're going to be like, here, open up the box. And there's going to be like three old people left living. They're like, sure, I'll keep the box.
You can use your Roku. I'll be that guy, by the way.
Will be that guy.
Here's the reason. Because of the FCC, Comcast has a monopoly. And that's the thing, is there isn't competition. Every town has one and exactly one cable company.
Yeah.
And so there isn't real competition. So if there were five cable companies I could choose from, I'd choose the one that let me use my own box, and that would be that. We'd be done with it.
I think we should just... The internet in most of the U.S., including in big cities, just isn't as good as the internet, the broadband in most other developed countries.
Right.
It's just factually
That's
a true statement. We pay more for it, and it's less reliable. We get slower speed. At the end of the day, that's my baseline. If Comcast was a total monopoly, but they provided internet that was objectively better, faster, and cheaper, and more reliable than anywhere else, I'd be like, all hail our new monopoly.
Yeah.
They're not. There should be more companies. But we have, this is not the biggest problem in the world, but we have pretty crappy internet in this country. And let's make it better.
And competition would do that. I agree, government regulation is scary on the internet. You probably don't want the government regulating the internet.
Well, I mean, maybe. Some other countries that have really good broadband have tight government regulation.
The ideal,
Korea is a prime example. I mean, when I was there, it was a gigabyte per second pretty much anywhere. And even on the subway, you were connected, you know, just at all times. You had fast.
Well, here's the utopia I'd like. I'd love to see local governments or state governments or maybe federal governments put in the infrastructure and then say, and anybody who wants to use, just as happens with a lot of utilities, anybody who wants to use it can do the over-the-top internet service you pay us to reimburse us for the building of the thing. So like the interstate highway, the infrastructure is created by government, but then that opens up competition. And then like trucking services, there's an infinite number of trucking services that can use those highways to get to people. And I think that's a sensible way. The problem we have is we're not starting from scratch. If you're starting from scratch, you'd do that, but we're not.
Right.
And that's always the problem, in the United States. We invented these technologies. Cell infrastructure is the same problem.
Well, look, I like what Owen said about the dinosaur and the meteor.
Yeah.
Like, be the meteor. That's what we're supposed to do.
So case in point, perfect real-world example. I was at my friend's house, and the mom was like, oh, turn off the TV. I want to watch something on Netflix. And her husband's like, oh, well, they have Netflix and Comcast now. She's like, I don't use that. Just turn on Apple TV. So she literally... Because she's been using Apple TV so long, she doesn't care. It's too late for Comcast to put it inside their device. Now this woman will go out, turn that off, Turn something on, change the thing, Go through a whole nother process, wait for it to boot up, and be happy with the experience on Apple TV with a different remote than use it in the Comcast.
I do the same thing. We have Netflix on our Comcast. Lisa will watch it on the Comcast, and I'll say, why are you watching on the Comcast box? You should watch it on the Roku box.
Yeah, and that because people are programmed. And again, when you wait so long, when you see the whole world with a plug in their arm, then maybe Leo, you can get one. But Phil's the first, and I want one now. Okay, we gotta wait. Let's get to some of that dinosaur before we get to stick of stuff. Mike, you with me, Nunez? You gonna wait?
I'm with you the whole way, all through the show.
Get the pork.
Me and Nunez, the only one with common sense. Leo, you just jumping down the hole. You ain't ate nothing. You got plugs in your arm.
I'm going to have one each arm.
That's right.
Sprint just bought a third of Tidal.
Dummies.
Yeah.
Sucker.
That's unfortunate.
Sucker. It's actually good for Tidal. It might even have saved Tidal, which is, of course, struggling against the other big music services. But Sprint has 45 million customers. That's a lot. They'd be in a position to push Tidal on Sprint phones.
Can I tell you my example of what Sprint is? So me and my daughter, sounds weird, we watch commercials because we don't watch it on TV. We watch everything else. But sometimes I'll show her commercials just to see her reaction as a youthful person. So we watch a Sprint commercial. The Sprint commercial ends. She's like, Dad, is Sprint a bad service? I said, why would you say that? She said, because their second and third line are free. They can't be giving away free lines like that unless their service
is horrible.
And
smart.
I'm like,
she is smart.
Have some of this tea, Leah, because we have been on Sprint a long time. I left Sprint to go to Verizon, then I jumped on an AT&T iPhone. Now I'm on that T-Mobile because I got that unlimited.
It's the best.
And for me and my kid. But she said she just dog Sprint like 15 seconds after that commercial. I'm like, you so smart. Yes, Sprint is terrible. But that's why they're out here buying titles, because they're trying to grasp and reach on to anything. And this is not something to reach and or grasp upon.
Snapchat says it's taken a hard line to misleading explicit images. Now, you can recuse yourself if you want, Phil, because I know you're a Snapchat investor. But I have to say, I agree. Every time So Discover originally was just dots, right? It had no images at all. It was just, ESPN, Discovery, whatever. And then they went to a magazine-style format. And, of course, immediately certain publications started putting half-naked women on their images, even if it had nothing to do with half-naked women, knowing that the college kids who use Snapchat would... there were bikini-clad women on every page. It was actually, as much as I love bikini-clad women, offensive. They're going to crack down on that.
Yeah.
What? Yeah.
I don't need to recuse myself when I say that I completely agree.
About time.
Yeah.
I hadn't used it in a while, and I went, what the what? Snapchat's Discover service had an article from MTV. Is this the thirstiest person on earth was the headline, with a picture of a bikini-clad blonde woman taking a selfie, even though the piece was about a fully clothed man.
Okay. Wow.
That's LinkedIn.
Egregious.
Yeah, it's kind of egregious. Yep. Come on. If you can't work a bikini into every story, you're not trying very hard. Super Mario Run coming to the Android in March. Now you too can pay $10 for a free game.
That's probably why you were using the 1.4 terabytes a month, right? It was just whatever the hell Mario Run is streaming in the background when
you're
playing.
Could be. It could be some game. But then did I stop playing for a month and start playing? And it could be, though. It could be something like that. I don't know.
If you haven't beaten it by now.
Have you beaten it? Oh, man.
No, I haven't. I don't play. but the people that I know that play have beaten it. You know?
I've beaten
feel
it,
like that.
Of course.
Yeah.
Phil, really?
Yeah, obviously. I'm not going to not play Mario.
It's the port on his arm. I'm telling you. He doesn't eat food. States are going to, I hope this happens, legalize the right to repair. Don't you have a right to repair? This kind of came up because people who own John Deere tractors were not allowed to access the software because John Deere was afraid they would steal it. And, of course, companies like Apple really don't want third-party repair companies to do well. But in Nebraska, Minnesota, New York, Massachusetts, and Kansas, the state legislators are working to legalize repair of devices from any manufacturer, including Apple. And this may be necessary because I find this hard to believe, but according to TechCrunch, Homeland Security raids repair shops because companies like Apple say, oh, they're using counterfeit repair part information, or they're repairing stuff they're not allowed to, and they're getting raided.
Yeah, so I'm going to take a contrary view to this and say I'm not really sure that this is a good idea. First, I think this kind of cheapens the idea of what rights are. So probably should not throw around the word right when we're talking about, you know, our gadgets and getting screens fixed and things like that. And there's other rights that are a little bit more fundamental. But more importantly, how exactly is this going to be implemented? The only way that this could actually play itself out is government restrictions about how products are made such that they support third-party repair services. And that could be a very significant barrier to just innovation, right? If Apple has a manufacturing process that nobody else can repair, are they going to be prohibited from using it because their devices have to be repairable?
Well, I would hope it wouldn't go that far. But
else could you enforce it?
Well, you don't have to enforce it. You just have to stop prosecuting people who want to repair Apple devices.
Well, that clearly.
But all that we're saying here.
But within a couple of years, they just won't be able to. So they can try. It just won't happen.
The requirement would be for a company like Apple to sell replacement parts, not just to Apple repair facilities, but to independent repair shops.
Yeah, so that I can see getting actually weird, right? Because that requires a certain level of technology transfer. There's all sorts of stuff that you can make that's just not repairable. Okay. I wouldn't want companies to be unable to. Look at the AirPods, right?
They're not repairable.
Okay, the AirPods are the AirPods, if anything, they're not a perfect product. To me, the AirPods feel like a mediocre product from 10 years in the future. Right? When you look at those AirPods,
we'll all have it, but we won't be happy.
Yeah, you're like, clearly this is not made by current technology.
That's so funny.
And they obviously aren't repairable.
That guy fixed it, so it gave him a zero on the repair.
Yeah, so
repair, you're more likely to lose it than you are to get it repaired. You're going to lose it before you need to fix it.
So should a law be made that says, Apple, you can't make these, you have to make something repairable?
Well,
I agree, that
not.
Should not be made.
Yeah, because the AirPods are a great product.
Yeah, but I also, I don't like when companies tell you that you can't open something that you've bought. So I remember a couple of years ago, the Xbox was being hacked pretty regularly, and there were rules prohibiting people from opening
the
their
Xbox. DMCA specifically prohibited it because
that was
reverse
bullshit.
Engineer copy protection.
Yeah, so
you should
be able to
break whatever you want. Just don't
especially if you own it. I mean, if you buy something,
I feel
should be able to open it up, repair it, hack it. Yes. You should be able to do whatever you want with it,
you should
car.
Not be able to break things you don't own. You're right.
Only can break things you own.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I got to be careful because I'm wearing a polarizing hat, so I don't want anyone to get the wrong.
I think doubly polarizing is people are misreading it from the comments. So.
Yeah.
You're
getting it both ways.
Yeah.
You're getting it both ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, they'll pick it up.
That's why Nunez is wearing them shades. They don't know him in the streets.
I thought he was wearing the shades because the futures are so bright.
Nah, you're incognito. Yeah. I know a suit when I see one. I know somebody hiding out in a black space site cave when I see one. That's Nunez.
He does have
maybe I'll try to get closer to the camera.
He does have a dragon head rearing behind him.
It's a cool dragon head. I've been looking at that dragon head.
Tell us about that dragon
time.
There.
Should I grab that? Hold on.
Yeah, go grab it. Michael Nunez is at gizmodo.com where he reviews tech.
Man, that thing is hefty.
Oh, man. That's is that Christina's? That thing is. No.
So it's a lot heavier than I expected.
Yeah.
That's no hollow head. That's
we saw you try to grab one hand. It was like, oh, no.
Wow. Plus, yeah, it's pretty heavy.
It's spiky.
But, nice. I think it's from Lord of the Rings or something.
Yeah. Oh, it is. It's Smaug.
Yes.
It is Smaug. Smaug. Yeah, Smaug.
That would be from The Hobbit.
Hobbit.
Oh, from the Hobbit.
Hobbit. Yes, The Hobbit.
It's the same universe.
He's in the Lord of the Rings too, right?
It's the same universe.
Briefly.
He wouldn't be a Lord of the Rings. No, he dies in The Hobbit. Setting up all of the events for the
Spoilers!
Lord of the Rings.
See?
Yeah.
And that, Phil, that's like the third strike. Phil, I'm trying to save you. You just keep whiffing at the ball,
You know why? Because cyborgs don't understand spoiler.
They sure don't.
To them, information by all rights should be free.
Saying that Smaug is from Lord of the Rings is fake news. It's clearly from The Hobbit.
You better fact check on this
technically, it's alternative facts because it's from the same lore, era, and genre and author. So, I mean,
if
alternative facts.
If Smaug hadn't died in The Hobbit, there couldn't be the Lord of the Rings. His arc sets up the whole story.
It does? I thought Gollum's arc set up the whole story.
Also that.
Our show today.
There wouldn't be a Gollum without Smaug.
There would be no Gollum without Smaug, ladies and gentlemen.
Sorry, there's few things that I'm going to get it.
What was that?
Did you read the books?
What was that? Oh, did you read the books?
You got people yelling out from the... Man, people are upset.
Yeah, wow.
You know, this you is, can talk all you want about Trump, want, but do want, not mess with the Lord of the Rings.
That's right. You want to see me lose my calm?
Yeah, apparently.
Talk shit about Lord of the Rings.
Phil, I've been trying all show.
Well done. Well done, sir.
World War III, no problem.
Can't we all just get along?
Deportation? Who cares about that?
Yeah.
The dragon is where we draw the line.
The dragon.
In the sand.
It is a very nice dragon head, though.
Let's take a quick break and then we'll wrap this up. Guys, calm down. It's going to be okay. You know what? Let's go home and make dinner. It's on me. I got Blue Apron waiting for me on my porch. Blue Apron is the amazing company that sends you a lovely refrigerated box filled with fresh, delishable ingredients. That's a new word, but I like it. Delishable ingredients to make high quality, wonderful home cooked meals. And every box comes with exactly the right amount, not more, not less. So if you need, a tablespoon of soy sauce, you get a little bottle with a tablespoon of soy sauce. So you don't have a whole bottle of soy sauce sitting in your refrigerator for the next 8 years that you'll never use again. Actually, you will, because once you cook these great recipes, you are going to go back and do it again and again. You will become a master chef without even knowing it. They have plans for couples. They have plans for families with kid-friendly ingredients. You never get anything you don't want. They have vegetarian meals, absolutely. You choose what you want from the Blue Apron website. You choose a day of delivery, and then instead of going to Olive Garden because you forgot to shop, you're going to have something wonderful waiting for you, like mushroom and cabbage dumplings. Oh, those look good. Or how about spicy shrimp and Korean rice cakes with cabbage and furikake? Hoisin chicken steam buns. See, you would never, I love steam buns, but you would never say, I can't make that at home. You'd never make it at home. You can hoisin chicken steam buns with broccoli and marinated carrots. And once you make that, you can make it again and again. You know how now. I'm telling you what, you got to try it. Now, you may say, oh, that's got to be expensive. It's actually less than buying the same ingredients at the grocery store. Grocery store is about 60% more expensive because they got more overhead. And so this is a win all around. If you spend a lot of time eating out or at high-end grocery chains, you're going to save money with Blue Apron. Under $10 per person for healthy home-cooked meals. The house smells great. It's like making love for your family, putting love on the table on a plate. It's the best thing ever. And your first three meals are free with free shipping. Just go to blueapron.com/twit. blueapron.com/twit. Join the Blue Apron family. Our family is a Blue Apron family, and I love it. I tell you, it's a lot of fun. BlueApron.com/twit. One more story. I want to issue a correction. I talked on the radio show. I had seen a story from our local Channel 5 News about a young couple in Berkeley who, according to the news, were killed by carbon monoxide poisoning caused by their laser cutter. In fact, it's a very sad story. 35-year-old Roger Morash is a game developer. He was working on a game called Shard. His wife, Valerie Morash, was a postdoc. They and their two cats were found dead Monday in their apartment. According to police sources, they were using Now, the police sources got it wrong, I think, because they were saying they were using a laser 3D printer. According to other sources, there was a small 3D printer and a laser cutter. That would make more sense. A laser cutter does generate smoke. The problem is there's no toxicology reports, and they don't know what caused it. And, in fact, when the hazardous materials team showed up, they couldn't find any evidence of carbon monoxide, but nor was there a gas leak. So it's really, it's a mystery. And the information.
So they just blamed the laser cutter because they didn't understand what it was?
Or? I think so. Although neighbors had apparently complained about a bad burning plastic smell coming from the apartment in the past twice. Hmm. Any event, very sad story.
Wow.
They were both MIT graduates. You know, they were one of us. So I'm very sad to hear about the more ashes. But I apologize for repeating what might have been actually fake news. That the car was carbon monoxide poisoning caused by the laser cutter. We just don't know yet. But it is also a word of warning, and that's the main reason I wanted to bring it up. See, carbon monoxide is odorless, tasteless. You can't tell. It can get in your. It comes from incomplete combustion, so your furnace, your water heater can happen. You should get a carbon monoxide detector. It's the only way of knowing. Had they, if that's what caused their deaths, had they had one, they wouldn't have suffered this. It's a mysterious death at this point, and so I'm just going to reserve that idea that it was CO. However, very dangerous. And if you had, I think Roger was well known as a kind of a maker. He would have known better than venting a laser cutter into the house. So that seems unlikely. Anyway, I just wanted to that story now is kind of suspicious. We're not sure exactly what happened. Toxicology takes a couple of weeks, and at that point, perhaps. Well, no, sad story. I don't want to end with that. Is there a happy story we could end with? What do you think, Owen J.J. Stone? Something to celebrate this week.
This week in Lord of the Rings.
Did you just look up Smaug's story arc?
I knew the movies. It's just so many of them, and they're like 42 days long. Maybe I got confused with what the beginning and the end was. It's kind of like Star Wars. You know, sometimes you just mix and match what's going on. But if you want to end the show on happiness, then just check everybody else out. Let me end the show. I'll make everybody feel good about themselves.
All right. Patented Owen J.J. Stone feel-good rant. But first, let's ask Phil, is there any other story that you want to cover or talk about? Did I cover everything that was...
Well, I mean, in important news, they announced the title and the logo for the next Star Wars movie.
The Last Jedi.
The Last Jedi.
What do you think that means?
Well, it's the completion of a sentence, right? Because it's The Force Awakens, The Last Jedi, and then we don't know where the third one is.
They're saying now that the Star Wars titles form a sentence.
They might.
Wait, what?
What?
I heard that.
It's like the Force Awakens, The
Rogue
Last
One,
Jedi.
The Last Jedi?
Well, no, Rogue One's, you know, is a different timeline.
Well, if we conveniently leave out some words.
Wait, I feel like you're missing a word.
The Force Awakens.
The Last Jedi.
The Last Jedi.
From
That's so Christmas 2019, Star Wars from his nap.
That's right.
Wow, that will be.
That's what we deduce.
A real, yeah.
It made me happy.
Nice.
The Last Jedi could be Luke, right?
That's the big question here, whether it's plural or singular.
That's right, it's like The Last Samurai. It's, you know,
I mean, I think the predominant view though is that The Last Jedi is Rey, right? I mean, I feel like they set that up so well, and
it's pretty clear she's a Jedi, although we don't know.
Technically speaking, Jedis are born every day, everywhere. They just don't know of their force like
that. But we need a midichlorian count. Without a midichlorian count, there's no way of knowing.
Man, Yoda didn't even really believe in all that. Neither did Qui-Do. He's like, so what about his midichlorian count? That don't mean he the man. I'm the man. I got a purple lightsaber. Don't talk to me about
that. I like this one.
It's true.
Battle Cam in our chat room says, actually, since Princess Leia was almost certainly a Jedi, maybe it's a tribute to Carrie Fisher.
She wasn't even really a princess.
Ooh.
It could be a tribute to Carrie Fisher. Although they probably have that planned more in advance. But in either case.
I thought she already shot her parts in the new...
Well, I think she shot her parts. But I think they're also trying to win the rights to use her, her posthumously. I think
Lucas or somebody debunk that they don't want to, I think J.J. Abrams debunked that, right? He said we're not going to do a fake carry. Although they did it with Ambassador Tarkin or whoever.
It was such a prominent role.
Grand Moff Tarkin.
Yeah. What?
Grand Moff Tarkin.
Grand Moff. But that means ambassador.
No, it doesn't.
What
What does Grand Moff mean? I didn't see Rogue One. I haven't seen it yet. So
I know you're trying to hate me into explaining what Grand Moff means, and I'm not.
You are the worst with these movies, man.
What?
You don't. What are you doing?
I saw Moonlight, Manchester by the Sea. I saw L.A. La Land. How do you pronounce that? L.A. Land.
You sound like a married man seeing movies.
I saw.
Somebody. Be quiet.
The best
somebody
minds of my generation. What?
Somebody in that twit house that is a man that drinks beer, take Leo to the movies bi-weekly. Please. Please get the man out to go see something where he can have a drink and just enjoy it. So man, someone's shooting. John Wick. If you don't see John Wick over the weekend,
God, I saw the first John Wick. That was the worst movie. Keanu Reeves cannot act. Whoa, you killed my dog, dude. That was not right.
It has nothing to do with
Oh, I am going to hurt you, dude.
That's pretty good.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Michael Muñez. He is at gizmodo.com. You can read Michael's stuff there, and he's also Michael F. Nunez on the Twitter. And he is going to make America raga again because he's all into that Indian Bollywood dancing.
Something like that, yeah.
I want that hat. Make America raga again.
I don't have any really final comments, but I will say thanks for having me and thanks for putting up with my rants all evening.
You don't get to say rant with Owen J.J. Stone in the house. Not at all. Phil Libin is always welcome here. Anytime you want to come and join us, your insight and knowledge and calmness and, of course, your bioport are always welcome. Managing Director at General Catalyst. P. Libin on the Twitter, and of course, a creator, one of the founders of Evernote.
Thank you. Super great to be here. Yeah. And just remember, no matter how bleak the world gets, Star Wars Episode 8 is coming out soon.
Really?
Well, December this year.
That's not, you know, December will be here before.
Last, yeah.
Before long.
Yeah.
I might be confusing John Wick with Jack Reacher. That's different, right?
Oh.
Whose dog was killed? Remember they stole his Mustang and they killed his dog?
That was John Wick. That was a great
terrible movie. Jack Reacher was that was Tom Cruise. Also a terrible movie.
Both.
You sound like
films.
A man who's been married for too long. You just
no,
got
my
all
wife
this.
Loves those movies.
Somebody take her out with a beer and have fun with her. Lisa, I'm coming to go to the movies.
Stop
with
it.
You.
That's my wife.
Happy birthday, Lisa.
It's her birthday. Happy birthday, Lisa. She runs this place. Without her, there would be no Twit. Owen J.J. Stone, sing us out.
So, first of all, there's a lovely older lady that's been a fan of yours for forever and a day. And she tweeted at me. And I was like, look at you. Who are you? Lynette Barton, shout out to you for watching Leo and putting up with his suffragette for like the last 30, 80 years, whatever it's been. I appreciate you tweeting to me and taking the time.
Yeah.
Secondly, promote myself because I never do. IQMZ, I do a show called Random Drinking where we drink and we watch memes. I do a sports show. I'm trying to do a tech show, but as you can see, sometimes the tech makes me depressed and I can't do an episode. And then I interview people. Watch me next week when I grill Phil and find out what all this peace and happiness is in his heart. Because let me tell you something. Phil's right. We need calm and relaxed people. But listen to me and Michael Nunez when we tell you we might have to burn this sucker down. And if we do, you get on Team Nunez and Team O Doctor. I know it's going to be okay. It's going to be all right. We together in this. You are not alone. I need you,
baby.
There's room in this cave for you to come, and we can talk and love and be happy. Because even when the world's a bad place, there's still good people. And I know you're good people because you're sitting there watching me in the chat room making fun of my ears and all kinds of other stuff. My shirt says trust no one, but I want to trust you. Be my friend. I love the fact that you spend Sunday 2 hours watching this show instead of football, which I don't know why you do it, but you do, and that makes you good people with me. Thanks for watching Twit. Another episode's in the can.
And I hope your Eagles win, my friend.
They're out. They're sitting on the couch. All right.
Falcons or Patriots?
Hope the Lord Jiminy Josephine Baker that it's the Falcons because I'm tired of pretty boy. I got a supermodel. Can't do nothing wrong in lifetime. Brady,
you're a Matt Ryan boy, huh? All right. Sure. How about you, Michael? Do you care?
I do. I'm a Chicago Bears fan. I want to get on the record. But for next weekend, I guess I'll be rooting for Julio Jones and the Atlanta Falcons. I like what they do.
All right. I feel like this is like an ESPN show where I'm asking for your picks.
What do you think, Phil? Hey, man, Falcons or Patriots?
Oh, my God, I do not care about sports.
That's the right answer. Congratulations.
Says the man with the needle cyborg arm. You can't trust him. He's not human. Phil's not human.
Thank you for joining us. Machine. We do this show every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2300 UTC. You can come by and say hi. Watch us on the live stream. We're on YouTube Live now, youtube.com/twit, of course, on our website. And if you want to be in studio, we'd love to have you. Got a nice studio audience today. Email tickets at twit.tv. We'll make sure there's a chair waiting for you. If you can't watch live on-demand audio and video of everything we do is available not only at our website, twit.tv, but also on iTunes, Stitcher, Google All Access, Spotify, everywhere you can get podcasts. Just subscribe. That way you won't miss an episode. Next week, our Super Bowl episode. So we've enlisted all people from outside of the United States to be on the show because we couldn't get anybody to be on the show because they all want to watch football. Phil, I should have asked you next week.
I made a big mistake. Yeah.
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Another twit is in the can.
This is amazing.
Doing the twit. All right.